It was the first SmackDown of the new year. 2025 is here. It was also the first SmackDown in the three-hour format. So long to two-hour Raws and two-hour SmackDowns. But it was also the first time that we have had a Money in the Bank cash-in on SmackDown in 6 years. Finally, it has happened. Tiffany Stratton. All the teases that we have had now for months. Every single week, it felt like Tiffany Stratton would tease, is tonight going to be the night that she would cash in her Money in the Bank? And then she would pull back, or something would happen. Something would get in the way. And it was to the point of absurdity where you just are begging for it to happen already. Not even so much that, you know, you obviously want to see Tiffany win the championship because she's very popular, even though she's a heel, but just enough with the teases. You got to give us something at some point. And it felt like maybe this being the first three-hour SmackDown, the first SmackDown of the new year, everything is all about Raw on Netflix this Monday, that they might want to give the fans something. They might want to throw them a bone here on the first SmackDown of the new year, and that's exactly what they did. Apparently, this was a closely guarded secret and was known internally for many weeks that this is what they were going to do. And the way they did it was actually very smart, because we had Nia Jax tonight defending the WWE Women's Championship against Naomi. These two had a really good match on SmackDown a couple of months ago. No real explanation of why Naomi was all of a sudden getting another shot at the title, but they did the match tonight. And the way they did this, they had Tiffany Stratton come out late in the match and make you think that not only was she not going to cash in, but that this whole thing, all of this discord between her and Candice LeRae and Nia and Tiffany feeling like she's been on the outside looking in, this was all part of some master plan to throw everybody off. It was all one big ruse, only it wasn't. They brought you down and then they had you come back up because Tiffany did cash in and she did win the championship. And we have a brand new WWE Women's Champion. It is indeed Tiffy time. And everybody went nuts. I mean, again, I call her a babyface. She basically is, because everybody's been cheering for this woman for months. I'm going back even to the beginning of last year when she was in Elimination Chamber. She was still new to the main roster, and you had people chanting her name. They were in Australia, all over the world. People have been cheering for Tiffany Stratton. She's been losing for many months. Usually that's what happens when they're setting you up for a cash-in. It was just a matter of when. It was not a matter of if. But now, she has the championship, and just in time, because there is a certain someone. Now that Tiffany has cashed in her Money in the Bank, it is only a matter of time before Charlotte Flair cashes in hers. And everything seems to be on track as we head into WrestleMania season for the match that I've been talking about now for months, which is Tiffany Stratton defending her title at WrestleMania against one Charlotte Flair, who I saw was in yet another photo that was floating around online. She's been training. And there was a photo of her with the former Peyton Royce and Kiana James, who made her debut on Raw last year after she was drafted. I think showed up twice and apparently tore her ACL. So she's been out for a while. But there they were. They were all, you know, hanging out together and training. So it's coming. It's coming. I don't know if they're going to hold off until the Royal Rumble. She could be on the show next week for all we know. But things seem to be set up perfectly for that to be the WrestleMania match in Las Vegas. But that was the highlight of SmackDown tonight. Honestly, looking at the entire show from beginning to end, they should have closed the show with that. What they closed the show with was a Bloodline six-man tag where Solo Sikoa was the last man standing. He stood tall, trying to make him look strong as we head into Tribal Combat on Raw this Monday on Netflix. It'll be Solo Sikoa against Roman Reigns. No Roman Reigns tonight. I mean, he's working on Monday. We don't want to disturb him. So he wasn't on the show. And honestly, he wasn't really needed on the show, I suppose. But no Roman Reigns. Nothing to take away from Solo Spotlight, which is how they went off the air tonight. And I thought, honestly, it was a pretty dull main event. I mean, there were parts of that match where the crowd was surprisingly quiet, given who was involved. You know, you had Jey Uso and Jimmy Uso, Sami Zayn were all out there. So I thought the main event, it wasn't a bad match. It was just dull. I think part of it is also, I think I've reached the point here where, at least with the new bloodline, where I have bloodline fatigue. And so I wasn't overly impressed by what we got in the main event tonight. If it were me, I would have flipped the two segments and closed on the Tiffany Stratton cash-in. They aired a commercial during the show tonight, because a lot of there's been a lot of discussion about Raw on Netflix this Monday. We know John Cena is going to be there. John Cena is going to be kicking off his retirement year this Monday in LA. I think he's going to announce for the Royal Rumble, but we'll see what he does. Logan Paul is going to be coming to Monday Night Raw. We know this from the press conference they had at Titan Tower a few weeks ago, so he'll be there on Monday. I wouldn't be surprised if him and John Cena both declare for the Royal Rumble match, and they start teasing something with the two of them, not for WrestleMania. You know, that's a match they could do at Elimination Chamber. But all the promotion tonight was for Raw on Netflix, and we got a commercial, and there were a lot of different faces in the commercial, but there was a new face, and that is The Rock. This is the first time, I believe, the first time in one of these Raw on Netflix commercials that they have The Rock, and you heard him say, "Finally!" He would not be in the commercial unless he was going to be there. It all but guarantees, because there's been talk about whether he would be there or not. The Rock will be on Raw this Monday night. They didn't tell you that, but read between the lines. The Rock will be on Raw this Monday night, and that could be very interesting when it comes to what happens either at the end of or after Tribal Combat, which we will talk about. They had another commercial promoting the second edition of Saturday Night's Main Event, which is coming up later this month, and this commercial had Hulk Hogan in the ad, hyping the show and promoting the show, which would seem to indicate that Hogan, who missed the first episode last month because he was at the UFC show that night, is probably going to be on the next edition of Saturday Night's Main Event in some form or fashion. And that will be interesting. Getting Hulk Hogan, potentially, and Jesse Ventura in the same building on the same show at the same time. But we have breaking news as well that actually has nothing to do with SmackDown tonight, but this was broken by Mike Johnson over on PW Insider during the show, as a matter of fact. And it is pretty big news because it concerns one of the biggest WWE PLEs typically of the year. Now, we know the Royal Rumble this year is in Indianapolis. They're going to be at Lucas Oil Stadium. Indianapolis is getting a WrestleMania. They're getting SummerSlam. They're getting a whole bunch of events. Next year, we now know already where the Royal Rumble is going to be taking place. And if you were hoping to go to the Royal Rumble, if you live here in the States, you're probably going to be pretty disappointed, because the 2026 edition of the Royal Rumble, according to PW Insider, will emanate from Saudi Arabia. This has been confirmed by multiple sources in the company. It says this will be the first time that the event will be held outside of the United States since the Rumble graduated into a pay-per-view back in January of 89, which is true. The first Rumble in 88 was a free special on USA. That was in Canada. They were in Hamilton, Ontario for that show. The report says that we are told the deal to take the event to Saudi is locked in, and that an official announcement could come as soon as this Monday's Raw on Netflix premiere. You know, there was a time where, you know, we would hear reports about talents who didn't want to work the Saudi shows. Crown Jewel, The Greatest Royal Rumble, Super Showdown, all these different shows. And certain people would stay behind for whatever their reasoning was. I don't know how many of those people may be left. I don't think there are many. But if there is anybody who just does not want to travel to Saudi Arabia or work the Saudi shows, that's going to be very interesting, because I don't know if, I would imagine they'll still have the option of not going if they don't want to. But if so, now you're faced with the prospect, if you don't want to go, of missing the second biggest PLE of the entire year. So again, I don't know how much of an issue that'll be come 2026. It was very different when they started running these shows in 2018. You don't really hear too much. Like Kevin Owens, for example, I think didn't go to the initial shows, but now he goes and Sami Zayn goes. So it may not be an issue, but with CM Punk, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But the Royal Rumble will be in Saudi next year. I'll tell you what, though. and there was already talk about this, but this all but confirms that Saudi Arabia will be getting a WrestleMania at some point. And it might not be next year. It might not even be in 2027, but they're going to get a WrestleMania. I know they were after one. They were after the Royal Rumble as well, and they got the Rumble. So they'll get a WrestleMania. But if you are a WWE fan who lives in the United Kingdom, think of all the years that those fans have been begging for a WrestleMania. Yeah, John Cena, the Money in the Bank pay-per-view 2 years ago, literally come out and cut a promo teasing the fans and basically letting you know. It sounded like they were letting you know that they had every intention of bringing a WrestleMania to the UK. And they went crazy and everyone was so excited, and then you haven't heard anything about it since. But just if Saudi Arabia gets a WrestleMania before the UK does, I would imagine there's going to be a lot of fans over there who are going to be very upset. So it'll be interesting to see which country gets it first. And is it going to be 2027? Is it going to be 2028? I'm not sure. But I know those fans have been waiting a very long time for WrestleMania. They may have to wait a little bit longer. This is your Friday Night SmackDown review for the very first time here in 2025. It is Friday night, January 3rd. I am the Solemn Monster. Thank you so much for tuning in to the review here tonight live on YouTube. Hit that subscribe button if you have not already done so. Let's talk about this show because there were some interesting notes. First of all, Michael Cole and Corey Graves, they were still on commentary for tonight, even though Michael Cole is expected to be moving over, and I think they've said that he's going to be moving over to Netflix. Starting on Monday, the announced team will be Michael Cole and Pat McAfee. So I assume going forward, it'll be a three-man team on SmackDown, and that'll be Joe Tessitore, Wade Barrett, and Corey Graves. But for tonight, it was Michael Cole and Corey Graves. Lillian Garcia was moved over from Mondays to Fridays, and so she is now doing the ring announcing for SmackDown. Alicia Taylor, who used to be with NXT and has been on SmackDown, is going to be moving over to Raw on Netflix. Some people have asked me for my thoughts on this. I am completely indifferent to the change. I don't care one way or the other. You're moving some parts around. I'm not particularly moved by the news either way, but those are the changes that have been made. But maybe the biggest change of all, and this was pretty noticeable when they came on. I will say when they came on the air tonight for the opening segment and Cody came out for a promo, I just thought they had put special carpet, like blue carpet in the ring like they do sometimes for certain segments. And it wasn't until we got the opening match and I saw the mat was still blue that I realized, oh shit, they have changed the color of the ring mats on SmackDown to blue, which is a pretty noticeable change. I don't mind it, although I will tell you that if they were going to make a change, I would have preferred they go back to blue ring ropes. I would even love it if they went back to the blue referee shirts that they had during the Ruthless Aggression era. Back then, all the referees on SmackDown wore blue striped shirts. So I would love to see them go back to that. But a blue mat and blue ring ropes, they don't go together. Too blue. You got to do one or the other. So they chose to go with the blue mats, which is fine. The white ropes, which is what they still have, that works better with a blue mat. So you can keep it that way. But does this mean that we are getting a red mat for Raw on Monday nights? Is that what we're going to find when we tune in on Netflix on Monday night? Because that would be a terrible idea. That would be about as good as having red as the color of the Hell in a Cell, which thankfully they have done away with. You know what I wouldn't mind if they want to make certain aesthetic changes to the show? A black mat. If they're going to change the color of the mat, I think a black mat with red ropes could probably work well on Monday nights. The black mat is what they used to have for the NXT TakeOver shows. See, that I feel like I wouldn't mind. A red mat, I don't think that works for me. But we'll see. We'll see if there are any changes to the set, the intro. I know Travis Barker, I think, is doing the new theme song for Raw. I think he's doing a song specifically for Monday Night Raw. So I suspect that we will get some cosmetic changes to the show when we tune in on Monday night. But if it's a black ring mat, I feel like that would be okay. Red, just, I feel like that's going to be too distracting. This is not CMLL. Or I know they have, not all the time, but they have had red mats in the past. We don't need that. But I did mention Cody Rhodes was out first to open the show tonight. Got in the ring and talked to the audience and told us that he can't wrestle right now because he is not medically cleared. After what Kevin Owens did to him, the two of them, of course, will have a ladder match for the Undisputed Championship at the Royal Rumble. Cody's title will be hanging, and the Winged Eagle will be hanging as well. But he was interrupted pretty quickly. He didn't really say much, but he was interrupted by Drew McIntyre, as Michael Cole took that as an opportunity to remind us that the transfer window is still in effect. Now, they have been completely, they haven't been completely transparent about when this transfer window is over. It's a very nebulous thing. And maybe they want it that way. Maybe they're going to keep it vague on purpose, so that way they could just move people back and forth every week. They could just say, hey, we're in the middle of a transfer window, and that way they could just move people around as they see fit. So we don't know when this transfer window is going to be over. It's still in effect. McIntyre gets in the ring, and he comes face-to-face with Cody. And then he hugs him. And Drew, which was something that Cody was clearly not expecting. So Drew said, look, I'm not here to hurt you. I'm here to help you. He said, Cody is not on his list, but he's about to screw up his entire life's work. He says all the dues that he's paid to make it to the top of WWE. This is the best talent roster, he says, in the history of the company. So the 80s, and he says, even the Attitude Era. He goes, this is the best collection of talent that we have ever had in this company in the history of this company, which collectively is probably true because they just have so much more talent now under contract than they ever did before. So I'm not even going to sit here and say that collectively that's necessarily an incorrect statement. Now, there are certain personalities that they used to have on the roster back in the 80s and 90s that were larger than life that are missing today and would make the product even more fun to follow, but that's neither here nor there. But he says that, Cody, you're the quarterback. You're the quarterback of all of this. Business is booming, the best talent roster ever, and you're the QB. But you're about to screw it all up. He says, Nick Aldis is not going to clear you, and there's a guy running around with a replica belt acting like he's the world champion. They're even acknowledging him at the live events as the champion because your neck is hanging by a thread. And Drew could see that Cody could use a friend. He could use somebody to watch his back. Not wash his back, which is what FTR were doing the last time we saw them on Monday Night Raw. So Cody stopped him and said, you want to help me, huh? You want to help me? You don't want to hurt me, you said? Drew said, that's right. I always tell the truth. Well, Cody said, I would like to drop some truth on you as well. I would love to say that it was Drew who carried this company through its darkest time. That, of course, being the empty arena shows during COVID. I would love to say that the two of us are kindred spirits. The fact that we both had to leave this place, make something of ourselves, and then come back and finish our story. All of those things. But he doesn't believe him. So let's cut right to it. You want to throw hands? You want a shot at this championship? Come and get it. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, boy, that devolved very quickly here. I mean, Drew is trying to be a nice guy and Cody is ready to throw hands. McIntyre said, look, I'm not here to hurt you. I'm here to help you. He stepped out onto the apron and then he stopped and he said, one more thing. You need to watch your back. And that was the setup for Kevin Owens to attack from behind. Cody fought back. Both men had to be separated by officials. Cody broke free. He dove for Owens in the corner, but then they finally got KO out of the ring. McIntyre and Owens, they even shared a kind of a look of mutual respect at one point. They kind of almost nodded at each other. Wasn't I just talking about this a couple of weeks ago? I was talking about the similarities between these two characters. I was talking about how they seem to have a lot more in common with each other in that Owens is a heel now. McIntyre is a heel. And on Raw, McIntyre is somebody who's been going around fancying himself as a truth teller. All right, he's been telling the truth about this place and about different people and about CM Punk. And I'm not the bad guy here. He's the bad guy. Everybody else is the bad guy. The Bloodline are the bad guys. Meanwhile, you have Kevin Owens doing the same thing on SmackDown. And he's talking about how shitty Roman Reigns and the Bloodline are and how, Cody, you turned your back on me. We were friends. And how could you do this? And I'm telling the truth. Let me tell all of you why I'm right and Cody is wrong, right? Very, very similar trajectories these two men have been on. But I was just talking about maybe a potential alliance involving them. Maybe even throw Seth Rollins in there at some point. But even a loose alliance between McIntyre and Owens. And so here, a little bit of coordination between the two of them, which is very interesting. The two heels who believe they're telling the truth. Now, this transfer window is still in effect. After Hell in a Cell, back in October, I said the move for Drew McIntyre, the next time we see him on TV, should be a move to SmackDown. Get him away from CM Punk, give him a whole host of new opponents to work with on the other brand, whether it's Roman Reigns, whether it's LA Knight, whoever it may be. But just a change of scenery, because McIntyre has basically propped up Monday Night Raw for a large portion of last year and, you know, made that show a lot of fun to follow for a good portion of the year. Now maybe he could do the same on Friday nights. And then he came back. They called him back early because Bronson Reed got hurt. And so he was on Raw. But now it looks like he may end up on SmackDown. And so I'm wondering if that was always the plan. And the only reason we even got him back on Raw was because they said, hey, look, Bronson went down with a broken foot. We need you back. You could wrestle Sammy on Saturday night's main event, right? Which wasn't even going to happen on that show. That was going to be Seth and Reed. We're going to wrestle on that show. So maybe this was the plan all along. It's the right move. I would move him over to SmackDown. They didn't say, you know, as a matter of fact, that he is now on SmackDown, but they certainly teased it, and I think it would be the right move to make. And I was thinking, you know, if let's say Sami Zayn was to end up on SmackDown, because we still have to get something with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Kevin Owens said, like, we'll cross that bridge, right? Remember that comment to Michael Cole in the car when he was being interviewed? He said, basically, I'll get to Sammy later on. Right now, I'm focused on Cody Rhodes. And he's going to have to contend with Randy Orton when Randy comes back. At some point, Owens and Zayn are going to butt heads. I don't know if that's going to be a WrestleMania match. I don't know if that's a match they might want to do in Toronto or Elimination Chamber. Because, you know, the crowd reaction to the two of them going at it on that show would be incredible. It would be just a fantastic atmosphere for that match. And we've seen it at WrestleMania before. Not that we can't see it again at WrestleMania, but it's been done at Mania before. So I wouldn't mind it if they did it on the Chamber show instead. But I was thinking about Drew. And what do you do with Drew McIntyre at WrestleMania? I bring up Sami Zayn because Drew is, to me anyway, clearly not going to be involved in the world championship picture at WrestleMania. I don't think he's wrestling Gunther for the world heavyweight title. And even though they kind of potentially set something up here, I don't think he's wrestling Cody Rhodes either. Cody has at least three other big names or bigger names that he could and probably will be working with over Drew McIntyre. McIntyre's three or four on the list at best right now. So if he's not wrestling for a world title, and if they don't do Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn at WrestleMania, maybe they do Kevin Owens and Randy Orton, I wonder if the plan would be for McIntyre and Sami Zayn. It's a match that we've seen before, but they told the story on commentary even this past match they had on Saturday night's main event. Sami has never beaten Drew before. He cannot beat this man. Every time they wrestle, Drew always leaves him laying. Could that be the match? Could it be Drew and Sami with the idea that Sami is going to try to finally get a win over Drew McIntyre? I feel like he deserves something bigger than that. I mean, McIntyre is that valuable to them and has put the work in and had an incredible year, and I feel like he should be doing something bigger at WrestleMania. A match with John Cena, right? They probably want Cena wrestling for the title against Cody, it sounds like, but That would be a huge match for Drew. If he got Cena in the ring, Cena's last WrestleMania match, right? That would be a huge spot for him. I don't get the impression that's the plan right now. So I was just thinking Drew and Sammy, it could be something for both of them to do if they're left out in the cold with nothing else to do come WrestleMania time. But Drew really, he deserves something big on that show. I hope he gets it. We had a non-title match with the United States champion Shinsuke Nakamura going one-on-one with Andrade. Nakamura was victorious, by the way, in his match against Ulka Sasaki at the Pro Wrestling Noah show on New Year's Day. They had the announcers lay out during his entrance, total silence, and we just absorbed Nakamura's entrance. They're still giving it that big feel, you know, treatment by not having anybody talk over it. It's an extended entrance. And then they went to a commercial 30 seconds into the match. Late in the match, Nakamura pulled off one of the top turnbuckle pads. Andrade, though, drop-kicked him backwards into the exposed buckle. Followed up with a meteora. Andrade went to the top. He landed his double jump moonsault where he misses it the first time, but then he hits the standing moonsault. Andrade set up for the message. Nakamura countered out of it only for Andrade to land that spinning back elbow that he does. Got a close near fall out of that. Andrade placed Nakamura on the top rope. Nakamura blocked the superplex attempt, and instead, Andrade got slammed down face first on the top portion of the ring post, that flat part of the post. Smacked his face right into the top of it. He was basically out, and Nakamura finished him off with the Kinshasa. It's worth noting that this was a non-title match, so even in a non-title situation, Andrade still gets beat, and that seems to be the end of him as far as the U.S. title picture is concerned for the foreseeable future. I thought the match itself was solid enough. I didn't hear great things about the match that Nakamura had on the Noah show. I haven't seen it yet. I hope I can find it somewhere, but from what I heard from people who did see it, it wasn't exactly... It wasn't a memorable bout. But I also don't know as far as the experience level of Ulka Sasaki. I think he used to be an MMA fighter. I don't know what his full story is. But this was solid. So LA Knight comes out when the match is over. He attacks Nakamura. Knight went for a BFT. Nakamura escaped the ring. So Knight grabbed the microphone. He said, look, one way or the other, he is going to collect what's owed to him, that being the U.S. title. That would indicate to me that LA Knight is not moving in this transfer window. If he's going after the United States Championship, he's actually challenging for it next week. They're doing the title match with him and Nakamura next Friday. I don't know how that's going to go. It doesn't feel to me like they're going to take the title off Nakamura yet. But I do feel like at the end of this, Knight will get the belt back in time to defend it at WrestleMania. So if they don't do it next week, I could see them running this back either Saturday night's main event, or the following week is the Royal Rumble, one of those two shows. But it just doesn't feel to me, you know, like we had a title change tonight. I don't see there being another one next week, but they're doing the match next Friday. We go to the back. Apollo Crews was walking, and he was approached by Pretty Deadly, who referred to him as Apollo Stooge and told him that snitches get stitches. That was after he narked on DIY. And told the Street Profits, hey, Gargano and Ciampa were the ones who attacked you. It wasn't Los Garza. So Santos Escobar showed up with Legado del Fantasma, and they accused Pretty Deadly of lying about his family being the ones responsible for attacking the Street Profits all those weeks ago. So Los Garza grabbed Prince and Wilson like they were about to kick their asses when Nick Aldis showed up, and he helped break things up. Aldis told Pretty Deadly, we need to have a chat. And that's exactly what they did after the commercial break. They're in the back, and Aldis asked them who attacked the Street Profits. Because Pretty Deadly said that they witnessed the entire thing, but then they lied about it. So he wants to know, who attacked the Street Profits? Even though you and I already know. We know the answer to that. DIY shows up, and Johnny Gargano questions why Nick Aldis took the word of Apollo Crews over these two fine gentlemen. Aldis said, look, I don't know what you're all up to. But you're on thin ice. So he left, and Gargano told Elton Prince and Kit Wilson that they would be great number one contenders. He's trying to butter them up, basically. He said, look, we can't lose our tag team titles tonight because they're defending them against the Motor City Machine Guns. We can't lose our titles tonight. But basically, like, if we win, we'll give you a shot, is basically what he's saying. And so off they went. Now we had the other United States champion, because now we have two of them on this show. We had Chelsea Green come out with Piper Niven. Piper Niven was wrestling Meechan. Things were going well for Meechan until Piper caught her. Yeet. Thank you, Jeremy Rose. Yeet to you too. Apollo Stooge. Yeah. Well, hey, I mean, better to be Apollo Stooge than Apollo Splooge, I suppose. So anyway, Piper Niven caught her and hit a sidewalk slam to Meechan on the floor outside as they went into the commercial break. The show came back, and Meechan had control after landing a bulldog. She went for eat defeat. Piper, though, countered and went for a cannonball, but Meechan moved, hit one of her own. Meechan went to the top, Niven moved, and then landed a Piper driver for a two count. Niven set up for a Vader bomb. Meechan got her feet up, and then she followed that up with eat defeat and pinned her. A 7-minute match, half of which was eaten up by commercials. Two people who did not benefit from the 3-hour format, Meechan and Piper Niven. At least not tonight, they didn't. So Meechan now picks up a win over Chelsea's friend. That sets her up for a U.S. title rematch down the line. Which isn't very creative. You know, you take the friend or the bodyguard, whatever you want to call her, and beat them in order to get a shot at the champion. We just saw this a few weeks ago on Raw with Raquel Rodriguez when she lost to Rhea Ripley. We're basically doing the same exact thing here on SmackDown, only they're doing it now with the U.S. title. So not very creative. By the way, I should mention this, that at one point, Michael Cole, he lost his mind on commentary because Meechan started twerking. Now, anytime a woman begins twerking, believe me, there are plenty of fans on social media who will start losing their minds. They'll start drooling. I mean, that's just kind of how it is. But she starts twerking, and Michael Cole says that Meechan calls that the long back attack, which is one hell of a name to give it, I have to say. But that's what she calls it. She calls it the long back attack. Okay. I'll tell you what, if Bailey ever starts twerking, it's going to have a very different name. And probably about 25 million views on social media. From that, from the long back attack, we go to Paul Heyman. Quite the transition here. Paul Heyman was out to the ring next for a promo all by himself. They made Heyman the hype man, which is, of course, a role that he's perfect for, to hype up the Tribal Combat match coming up on the Netflix debut this Monday night. Comes out and he says he wants to set something straight. On Monday, they will find out who the real Tribal Chief is. And Heyman said that he and Roman Reigns, they trained Solo Sikoa to become the next Tribal Chief, but not right now. And then he gave us a little history lesson, and he recalled everything that happened to WrestleMania this year. He said after lusting for 10 years for revenge on Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns could not turn down that lust, and he finally got revenge, which is a little weird, by the way. You talk about lusting for another man, but in this case, I guess he was lusting for revenge. Not like the lust for Elizabeth that Hogan had many years ago. But he, you know, that thirst for revenge, it got to Roman. Remember, that was in the main event at WrestleMania 40 when he opted to hit Seth with a chair instead of Cody. Cody made a comeback. He ended up beating him and winning the championship. And that's when Solo seized the moment, according to Heyman, and stole the Ula Fala out of Roman's bag. In the back. He said that twisted son of a bitch did not earn that Ula Fala. He stole it from Roman Reigns. He got rid of Jimmy Uso. He got rid of the Wise Man. Why? Because he knew no sane man would ever acknowledge Solo Sikoa. So what did he do? What did Solo Sikoa do? Says he went out, he got his own band of filthy animals who don't belong in professional wrestling. He said Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa, they're not welcome in the United States. And Jacob Fatu, who isn't even welcome outside the United States prison system. He brings all of these men in. Heyman said that on Monday there must be a winner and there must be a loser. He said the only tribal chief, Roman Reigns, will win on Monday. And he started to walk out when Solo Sikoa's theme song started playing, and he walked out all by himself, and he made his way down to the ring alone. So he's standing in the ring across from Heyman. Heyman said, I was about 10 seconds away from pissing my pants. Because the last time they did what they're doing right now, Solo had Heyman put through a table. So Solo put his hand out for Heyman's microphone. Heyman gave it to him, and Solo told Phoenix, Arizona to acknowledge him, and they did with boos. Solo said that it was time for Heyman to come to terms with the truth. He said, you owe CM Punk a favor, don't you? And Heyman said, yeah, I owe him a favor. And so he says, well, I'm going to ask you for a favor. Going to ask you to hold the Ulafala during the tribal combat match on Monday night. Solo said if Roman wins, Heyman will put the Ulafala around the neck of Roman Reigns and Solo will acknowledge Roman as the tribal chief. However, Solo said when he beats Roman, and he will, Heyman will have to put the Ulafala around his neck, and that will mean that he owns Heyman and Heyman will be Solo's wise man forever. And at that point, Roman will have no choice but to finally acknowledge him. This was as good of a go-home segment as you were going to get without Roman Reigns being there. I mean, he wasn't going to beat up Paul Heyman again. And Roman just wasn't there. So they couldn't interact with each other. There was no back and forth between them. So this was as good as you could, you know, possibly ask for. Have Heyman come out and be the hype man, which is the role that he's perfect for. He laid out the backstory. I thought he did a great job of putting over the Tongans and Jacob Fatu as just these dangerous menaces, you know, who could get involved and probably will get involved on Monday because in a tribal rules match or whatever, tribal combat, there are no rules. So I'm sure we'll see them there. Although Tonga Loa, let's be honest, Tonga Loa is not much of a threat to anybody right now. He's a one-armed man. So what they've also done here, though, is with Heyman having a role now in this match, as far as holding the Ulafala, presenting the Ulafala, you know, placing it around the neck of the winner when the match is over, they have introduced him into this match, a nice little wrinkle to add to things on Monday night. And it's not exactly the same thing, but one of the things that it made me think of was SummerSlam back in 96 when we had the Boiler Room Brawl between The Undertaker and Mankind. And the objective was you start in the boiler room, you fight your way all the way to the ring. And the only way the match ends is when you take possession of the urn from the hands of Paul Bearer, who's in the ring waiting for these two men to fight their way into the arena, right? And so the match will only end when they take possession of the urn. It's not a case here where Paul Heyman will have the Ulafala and they're starting in the back. And the only way the match ends is to grab the Ulafala. But what happened at the end of that match? Paul Bearer turned on The Undertaker. A six-year union flushed down the toilet. And he turned on The Undertaker. Is there a chance that Paul Heyman will turn against Roman Reigns after the tribal combat match on Monday night? I don't see it. I don't see it happening. Not on Monday, I don't see it happening. But I do like that they're at least trying to build some additional drama around things where, you know, some fans now might buy into the idea that, oh, you can't trust Heyman, right? It's not like he hasn't turned on people before. Maybe he'll turn on Roman Reigns. Maybe he'll join the new bloodline. Maybe they want him away from Roman Reigns whenever CM Punk is, you know, ready to cash in on his favor. Who knows? I don't believe it's going to happen. But I don't fault them for at least trying to build some more intrigue in this. But one thing I will say, I mentioned the commercial that they aired and The Rock being in the commercial. I fully expect The Rock to be on that show on Monday night. if The Rock was going to do anything but come out and just, you know, just cut a generic promo or just literally show up and say nothing like he did at Bad Blood, if he's going to show up, I think this right here could be the spot where it happens. If you think about it, why wouldn't it? Why wouldn't this be the spot? Last we saw of him, he was running around with Roman Reigns. He's part of the Bloodline. You have two people now who are going to be wrestling each other, part of the family, laying claim to the title of Tribal Chief, laying claim to the Ulafala. And The Rock, if he's going to be there on Monday night, why would he not interject himself in this in some way, even if it was just post-match, like whoever wins and then The Rock comes out? It just feels to me like if he's going to be on that show on Monday, this is where we're going to see him. And if this is where we see him, is that an indication that we could still get Roman Reigns and The Rock? Because there's been a lot of talk about WWE now thinking about doing Roman Reigns and CM Punk at WrestleMania. Would they do Roman and Rock? I feel like if they were ever going to do Roman and Rock, and again, The Rock is not getting any younger, Las Vegas. You know, I don't know where WrestleMania is going to be in 2026. Maybe Saudi Arabia. But like WrestleMania coming to Las Vegas, you know, as we've seemingly gotten away from Roman and Rock as an idea, I'm still kind of surprised by that because I figured that would be a place where they can build this match up in a major way. It's like a big fight, right? And you do it in Vegas. I think there's still a chance. There's still a chance we can get Rock and Cody. Monday night is going to really tell the tale in many ways about WrestleMania and the direction for WrestleMania for at least a couple of different matches. It's a very important show. It's not just a big show with big matches on Monday. It's an important show because I think it's going to directly tie into the direction for some key matches at WrestleMania. And what, if anything, The Rock is going to be doing on that show. But if he shows up, I think this is where he shows up. Whatever he does, I think this is where it happens. Now, after this, we had DIY taking on the Motor City Machine Guns for the WWE Tag Team Championship. First, the Judgment Day, now DIY. The latest victims of getting what I would call theme music castration. They have gotten new theme music, which is a downgrade over the music that they had before. And the music they had before wasn't that great. Somehow they made it worse. Although when this match was over, they actually played their previous theme music. So I don't know now if they have an entrance theme and an exit theme or if they played it by accident, but it definitely was two different tracks. It was like, wait a minute, they're back to their old music now. But they definitely came out to something new that did not sound very good. Corey Graves on commentary, and Michael Cole. Michael Cole was also getting in on this, but Corey Graves in particular, he's been going in really hard on Johnny Gargano and how he doesn't like Johnny Gargano. And he's known Johnny Gargano for many years, going back to the Cleveland wrestling scene back in the day, and Johnny Gargano's only out for himself. And he's using Tommaso Ciampa, and Ciampa just doesn't see it, right? It's kind of weird because that's not really the story they were telling before with, you know, Ciampa, when Ciampa was the one who had an attitude and was pushing Johnny around. And yeah, then we come to find out that they're on the same page together. So it almost felt like, okay, now they're trying to really force this other story on us that Gargano is the puppet master and he's just, you know, he's manipulating Tommaso Ciampa and he's a scumbag and he's this and he's that. But he says, I've been telling people about what a detestable human being Johnny Gargano is for years. And then Corey, he says, ask M-Dog 20. Ask Prohibition. Ask the Duke. Any of those Cleveland guys who never quite made it to WWE because of people like Johnny Gargano. And now he's using Tommaso Ciampa. I was not expecting a Matt Cross reference on SmackDown, but there it was. Son of Havoc. If you know, you know. Good old Son of Havoc. So the Machine Guns, they had the advantage heading into the commercial break. Chris Sabin tagged in. He and Alex Shelley, they hit stereo splashes on Ciampa and Gargano outside. But Shelley, after landing, he starts selling a possible knee injury. Sabin and Ciampa, they traded strikes in the middle of the ring. A lot of super kicks went back and forth among all four. Both teams are down for the stalemate. And the crowd gave them a very nice ovation. So the crowd was super into this. Ciampa and Shelley, they wound up as the legal men. And Ciampa, he chopped the hell out of them. Shelley returned the favor. Sabin tagged in, and the Machine Guns landed a flurry of double-team moves. They went for their skull and bones finish. Here comes Pretty Deadly. And they ran out. They distracted the Guns. DIY, they took advantage, and it looked like Gargano was about to get the win after a super kick, but Shelley kicked out at the last second. Here comes Los Garza. They run out to chase Pretty Deadly into the crowd. Back in the ring, the Guns put the champions in simultaneous Border City stretches. They're like basically right next to each other. I thought they were going to do one of these finishes where, you know, one of them looks like they're about to tap and the other guy grabs the wrist and stops him from doing so. But it looks like we're about to get a simultaneous tap out here and potentially new tag team champions. But at that moment, Angel Garza, he chases Kit Wilson into the ring and he tackles him. He spears him. But when he does it, he tackles him onto the champs and the challengers. And that breaks up both submissions, and the referee just calls for the bell and throws the match away. Right? Because which team, both teams got touched, but like, who did they intend to touch? We don't know. So that means the match is a no contest. We had a pretty good match here. I thought it was one of the best matches the Machine Guns have had so far. They haven't had that many, but it was easily one of the best that they've had, if not the best so far. A very unsatisfying finish, though. I think that goes without saying. But it was better than DIY just beating them. You know, it was done as a way to protect the Machine Guns. It also prolongs things. Look, this wasn't even advertised. When I put the preview together for tonight's show, there were two things listed. They had a women's championship match, right, with Nia Jax and Naomi. And they had the non-title match with Andrade and Shinsuke Nakamura. They didn't have this listed. This was a WWE Tag Team Championship match. And this wasn't even listed in the rundown. So what this does is it prolongs the feud for at least one more match. And it brings Los Garza into things now to where we may end up with a triple threat match. And I think that would actually be a pretty potentially badass match. Get Los Garza in there with DIY and the Machine Guns. See, I would like to see them do this match on a PLE. It's what I was talking about when we got that Best of Seven series with Andrade and Carmelo Hayes. And they were going out there almost every single week, and they were tearing it up. They were getting great reactions, and they were having these really good matches, but it was, you know, always interrupted by commercial breaks at the exact moment that you would expect. Okay, they're going to commercial. And I'm like, man, these two deserve to go out there uninterrupted for 15 minutes on a PLE and just have a match. And then eventually we got that triple threat. It was them in LA Knight, and they had a great match. I would love to see these three teams, if they're going to do that match, do it on the Royal Rumble card. Why not? I know they probably won't. You know, space on the Rumble card is going to be limited anyway. We already know you got two Rumble matches and a ladder match, so you know, we're probably going to get two more matches at the most. I doubt this would be one of them. But I do wish that we could just kind of, you know, get these three teams out there if they're going to do it. Give them 15 to 18 minutes and just let them kick ass. So I know it would get over. I mean, the talent involved here is tremendous. But yes, it prolongs things a little bit longer now and allows for a rematch at some point down the road. And also, Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin, they could blame Los Garza for costing them the titles, right? If you guys didn't get involved, we would have had the titles won. So either we get a Machine Guns and a Los Garza match, and then the winners go on to challenge for the titles, or we get the triple threat. They showed Nia Jax and Candice LeRae. They were talking in the back, and Nia was wondering, where is Tiffany Stratton? Didn't know where she was. She told Candice, make sure Bianca Belair does not interfere in her match later. Because they were both going to be out there in their respective corners. They showed Sami Zayn. He was walking backstage. and he ran into Carmelo Hayes. And Carmelo Hayes said that if it wasn't for your boy, Braun Strowman, he would have had Sammy beaten last week. So the Usos show up, and they ask, we got a problem here? So Melo ends up walking away. Sammy went off to go get ready for the main event. Jimmy and Jay, they start walking when Jay bumps shoulders with Kevin Owens, who happens to be walking by. He's got the Winged Eagle title over his shoulder. They bump into each other. Jay says, you need to watch where you're going, Oos. Owens tells him, I think you need to watch your back. And he continues on his way. Jay has a match with Drew McIntyre on Netflix this Monday. Maybe a little foreshadowing with Owens returning the favor to McIntyre. For McIntyre, what he did for him in the opening segment. Looking out for him, providing the distraction long enough for him to attack Cody from behind. I think we might see Owens pay that favor back on Monday night. Speaking of Cody, Cody was in the back. He was walking, looked like he was leaving. When Nick Aldis walked up to him, and Aldis said, Cody seems like he's hell-bent on not making it to the Royal Rumble. He pleaded with Cody to think about his future. He said that if Cody won't do that, he will do that for him. And Cody put him over and said, look, I know you're my boss, and actually, I think you're a great boss. But you're the boss, I'm the champ. And he said, because of that, I deserve the ability to call my own shot. He said that if he sees Kevin Owens or anyone who looks like Kevin Owens, which could be half the fucking arena, he will drop them on sight. So if I were a fan looking like Kevin Owens, I would be steering clear of Cody Rhodes. Then we had Nia Jax and Naomi for the WWE Women's Championship. This is a rematch from a match we saw, I guess at this point it was about a month and a half ago. I think it was right before the Survivor Series. Naomi came out here with Bianca Belair, her tag team championship partner, in her corner. Nia Jax had Candice LeRae in her corner. The match they had back in November was really good. And this match here was no different. Some people, they just gel well together, and other people don't. These two seem to have a certain chemistry where they work well together. And they got a lot of time, too, because they gave them almost 20 minutes. Nia was in control ahead of the first commercial break. Show came back and Naomi got caught, only to get slammed by Nia. But then Naomi tried to fight back. Nia cut her off with a body slam, crushed Naomi's head against the ring post, and then Nia lifted Naomi. Naomi rolled into a sunset flip in a pin attempt that was not successful. Nia set up for her finish. Naomi avoided it, followed that with a double stomp, and then her split leg drop for a two count. Nia ran at Naomi, but Naomi moved, and Nia ran into the ring post. So Nia finds herself on the outside. Naomi lands a suicide dive, rolls her back into the ring, and then catches Nia. As Nia is coming off, she whips her into the ropes, and she catches Nia coming off the ropes with a Samoan drop for a near fall. Now, she didn't have her up there for very long. It was one of those things where she got her up very briefly and then immediately dropped her, but still, that was a cool spot. So Naomi sets up for a split-legged moonsault. Nia cuts her off. And from there, Nia hits a leg drop from the second rope. Looks like it might be over. Naomi kicks out. And the fans are into it. The fans are with them. Fans are liking what they're seeing. Nia sets up for her finish again. Naomi pulls Nia off the ropes and hits a tornado DDT. Only gets two. She plants Nia with a draping DDT. And at that point, the show went to another commercial break. So you can tell they got a lot of time here because this is now the second break they've gone through. They come back and Naomi hits a blockbuster for a two count. Out of nowhere, Naomi slams Nia and gets a great near fall out of that. Now we have on the outside Bianca Belair and Candice LeRae, and they start brawling. Naomi, meanwhile, is going for a submission hold. Nia breaks it. She goes outside, and she throws one of the women's tag team belts at Bianca, hits her like in the stomach, and then she sends Bianca into the ring steps. Nia goes to the second rope on the inside. Naomi cuts her off, joins her on the ropes. Nia counters. She looks like she's about to do a power slam. She's got her like on her shoulder. She's going to do an over-the-shoulder power slam, but Naomi turns it into a slam of her own. Basically, they do a complete flip. Nia takes the bump on the way down. And at that point, we heard Tiffany Stratton's music. And out she comes, and she got a great ovation from the fans because, A, the people like Tiffany Stratton, and B, they thought, okay, finally, we're going to get a cash-in. So, of course, they're excited, right? Ooh, we get to see a Money in the Bank cash. But we've been burned by this before. But here comes Tiffany. She's got the briefcase. She goes over, and she's by the timekeeper's area. And she tells the referee, I want a cash-in. Referee turns around to go tell Lillian Garcia. But when the referee turns around to go tell Lillian Garcia, Tiffany inexplicably knocks the referee over the barricade. It's like, the fuck is going on here? So then Tiffany walks over and hits Naomi in the head with the briefcase when Naomi sticks her head out through the ropes to see what's going on, whacks her in the head with it. After the assist from Tiffany, Nia scales the ropes. Finally, she hits the Annihilator, and she gets the pin. Naomi is a loser once again. And this time it was Tiffany, again, a thorn in her side, who cost her the championship. So we know coming out of this, Naomi is not going to be very happy about what happened. She's going to have a bone to pick with Tiffany Stratton. But Nia Jax is still the WWE Women's Champion. And the announcers sell this like this was all a ruse. And Tiffany, this entire time, there was no, you know, ill feelings, you know, between them. It was all just part of the plan to throw everybody off. They're all on the same page, or they're back on the same page, and everything's cool. So Tiffany is in the ring with Nia and with Candace, and Tiffany kind of motions, hey, you know, Bianca is in the corner. I think Bianca was kneeling down, I think, checking on Naomi. So Nia goes over to attack her. And then she went to scale the ropes for the Annihilator. And Tiffany hits Nia in the back with the briefcase before she can hit the move. And the fans lose their minds because now they see what's going on here. Now they're losing their minds. Candace is like, what are you doing? And she grabs Candace and she posts her in the corner. She sends her through the ropes into the ring post. Bianca Belair. Now, Nia is still in the ropes. Bianca Belair manages to hoist Nia Jax onto her shoulders and hold her there for a while. Gets her on her shoulders and hits a picture-perfect KOD. Tiffany Stratton's on the outside when this happens. She reaches through the ropes, grabs Bianca, pulls her out of the ring, and throws her ass over the announce desk. And Bianca just goes sailing over the announce desk. And now she is ready for real this time. She tells the referee, who she assaulted earlier, I'm ready to cash in. I want to cash in my Money in the Bank. Hands over the briefcase. She gets into the ring, and she's setting up already for her moonsault. Because Nia Jax is in perfect position for it, flat on her back. But she's got to wait because Lillian is taking her time to make the announcement. She makes it official. We hear the ding, ding, ding. And Tiffany Stratton goes up. She hits her prettiest moonsault ever. And finally, she pins Nia Jax. And we have got ourselves a brand new WWE Women's Champion here to kick off the new year on SmackDown. I think the best part of this, and this was smart for Triple H to do this, the fake out. The fake out. They made you believe, because we've so many times, even just in the last month, let alone the last 5 or 6 months, so many times we've had these teases of a cash-in, and then they pull back, and it's not even that that's a bad thing that you would tease it, but they did it so often. It was like beating a dead horse. But because of that, and then because it looked like, oh man, this is all one big orchestrated plan, it just takes the wind out of your sails because it's like, oh, what a fucking terrible finish this is, right? And he convinces you of it. And then they lower the boom and it's like, oh no. No. We're not on the same page after all. And then they give you what you were hoping to get. And God knows I was hoping to get a cash in here tonight because I don't think I could have stomached another month or 2 months of this. It's just ridiculous. It's not even like there was any variety. to the different cash-in teases. It's just a lot of the same shit over and over and over again. Like, there was a chance to do something in War Games, which has never been done before, and they didn't take it. And that was, you know, over a month ago, and so here we are, and she still has the briefcase. So I think the way that they went about doing it was very smart. It's like the Triple H thing with NXT that he's carried over to the main roster, where he'll throw the copyright box in the corner of the screen. You think the show's over, but it's not. It's like that Easter egg that you get at the end of some of the Marvel films if you sit through the credits, right? He does that a lot. It was smart. It was smart to go about doing it that way. But I, you know, before I even talk about anything else here, I don't want to downplay the most impressive part of this entire thing, which is Bianca Belair getting Nia Jax up on her shoulders and holding her there for a good 4, 5, 6 seconds, whatever it was, and then hitting a picture-perfect KOD. That was fucking impressive. I mean, we already know Bianca is a freak athlete. She's super strong, but credit to her, man. I have a hat on here, but if I did, I would give her a hat tip, because that was an impressive spot. It's going to get lost in the noise of the cash-in, but I just wanted to bring that up again because that was a cool spot. So now where do we go from here? Tiffany Stratton is the champion, long time coming. She's already being cheered by these crowds. I don't know if they're going to flat out turn her baby face. I think she'll just keep doing what she's been doing, playing that same, you know, that same character. The fans may cheer for her anyway, although, again, Naomi is a popular baby face. She's going to have a bone to pick with Tiffany. What Tiffany did to Naomi is shitty. You would think the fans would hate her for it, but they don't. They don't seem to hate her for it. So I don't know if she's, you know, officially now going to end up being a babyface or not. But one thing I am confident in is that when Charlotte Flair comes back, it's going to be soon. And when she comes back, I think it'll be on SmackDown, and I think the WrestleMania match is going to be Tiffany defending against Charlotte Flair. Tiffany cashed in her Money in the Bank tonight. Charlotte will cash in her Charlotte in the Bank in some way, shape, or form, whether she just simply asks for a title shot, or she wins the Royal Rumble, or she wins a chamber match, or some other kind of number one contenders match. You know it's coming. And it's probably coming at WrestleMania. And I think it has the potential to be a great match. First time ever, Charlotte Flair against Tiffany Stratton. But would they put the title on Charlotte and take it off Tiffany? We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. We're not there yet. But I do think that's the direction, ultimately, for WrestleMania that will play itself out in the weeks to come. If you think about what could the Tiffany Stratton match be at WrestleMania, it's not going to be Bayley. It's not going to be a rematch with Nia. It's not going to be Naomi. It's going to be Charlotte Flair. I believe it's going to be Charlotte Flair. But this was great. This was the high point of the show. And I am just happy that we no longer have to sit through constant Money in the Bank teases. Will she? Won't she? And then it just ends up playing out the exact same boring way. I'm glad they finally pulled the trigger tonight. This show also, and I feel like all the attention is on Raw right now because of Netflix. And that card on Monday is so stacked. They had to throw SmackDown a bone here. They had to do something special on this show. So tonight was the right night to do it. Now, Solo Sikoa was shown walking through the backstage area. Yeah, Jacob Fatu, and there he is. There's the man himself. He had Jacob Fatu and Tama Tonga with him, and Jacob yelled that he loves Solo. He loves Solo. There he is again. Look at this. You're seeing a lot of Jacob Fatu here. But he loves Solo.
I love you, Solo!
Yes, indeed. He made that very clear. And then he starts yelling about how Solo opened his eyes and how he was about to show what happens when you don't acknowledge the one and only tribal chief. Fatu said that when Solo beat Roman's ass this Monday, the entire world will acknowledge him. And they all made their entrance for the main event, which was the Usos and Sami Zayn taking on Solo Sikoa, Jacob Fatu, and Tama Tonga. The babyfaces entered from the concourse. They gave Jey Uso the full entrance treatment on this show. So it was Jimmy, Jay, and Sammy, and they're coming through the fans on the concourse. They make their way out into the arena. They play Jay's music. Everybody's, you know, yeeting and bouncing up and down, right? It's a great entrance. But they let his entire entrance play out for what had to be a full 5 or 6 minutes. I mean, it was a long time. Even once they got to the ring, like, they just kept playing the music, and they're just, you know, Solo Sikoa is just standing on the outside, and this entrance is still going on here. And I'm thinking, well, of course, they have 3 hours to play with now, so we can get the extended entrances, like it's a PLE when they have 5 matches, right? So they could fit long entrances.
Gunthar. Jerry Lawler loves Gunthar the Magnificent. All hail Gunthar.
We've got an entrance right here from the Irate Observer with the $50 super chat drop. Hey, Irate Observer, thank you, man. That's very kind of you. Stick around. I'm going to read your message here in a little bit. We got ourselves a Gunthar bomb tonight. So, yeah, what I was saying is we have this extended Jey Uso entrance, and I'm like, are we going to get a 6-minute entrance from this guy? Uninterrupted. Only to ring the bell, start the match, and 30 seconds later get a fucking commercial. One guess. I'll give you one guess. Of course that's what we got. After all that, they finally start the match, and then they take a commercial break. You couldn't go to commercial once they hit the ring and come back and then start the match. It's just one of the pet peeves that I have about WWE and the way they format these shows. Like, they have a certain number of commercials they have to do. It's out of their control. They have to do it. But I would imagine they have control over the way they format these shows, and they don't do it enough where they try to just change things up a little bit. It's always the same thing. The match starts, and you know you're going to get maybe 30 to 45 seconds of action, and it's going to be right to commercial. Just bugs the shit out of me. But hey, we got to see the entire entrance from start to finish. So if you're a Jey Uso fan, I guess that makes you happy. Solo tagged in after the break, and he worked over Jimmy. Jimmy got the advantage, though. He tagged in Sami Zayn. He came off the middle rope. Solo caught him, though, and he hit a spinning Solo. Show went to another commercial break at that point. They come back and Solo hits a Samoan drop. Tama Tonga tagged in, and he did some wild grounding and pounding here on Sami Zayn. Fatu tags in, he hits a hip attack. Solo tagged back in. Not long after this, though, Sami Zayn hits a blue thunderbomb on Solo Sikoa out of nowhere, and then gets the hot tag to Jey Uso. Tama Tonga tagged in. Jey controlled him, though, with kicks and punches and chops. Jimmy tagged in. The Usos hit stereo enziguris. Jimmy and Jey then faced off with Jacob Fatu, who got clotheslined out over the top rope. Jey hit a pop-up neck breaker on Tama Tonga for a near fall. Excuse me. Bit my tongue. I think I drew blood. That hurt. I've been injured. I took a bump here during the stream. Do you believe this? Son of a bitch. Fatu tagged in, and Jimmy ended up as the legal man. Jimmy and Sammy, they hit hip attacks on Jacob Fatu. Sammy and Jey, they hit suicide dives out onto Tama Tonga and Solo Sikoa. So now Jimmy is inside the ring. He hits an Uso splash on Jacob, not a very good one, and he gets a 2 count. And Michael Cole, he's wondering, oh, did you see the way he landed that splash? Maybe he's still a little skittish after what happened in War Games when he came off the top of the cage and he had the broken toe. It's a good cover there. Nice cover for a shitty splash there by Michael Cole. Fatu super kicked Jimmy, and then he went up to the top where he first hit a splash, and then he hit the double jump moonsault. Sami Zayn, though, made it into the ring just in the nick of time to break up the pin attempt. Color the hard way. Yeah, we get hard way juice here on this show. That's what we get. Unfortunately, New York is a commission state. So if the commissioner is here, I could get myself in some trouble. I've got to be careful. Fatu threw Sami Zayn out of the ring, and he set up Jimmy for something. that he was going for. Jimmy, though, ran Fatu back into the corner. Jay tagged in. Jimmy and Jay then hit double super kicks. Here comes Drew McIntyre. No music or anything, but here comes Drew McIntyre walking down the aisle, taking his time. And Jay decides he's distracted by this, and Jay hits a suicide dive, takes out Drew McIntyre, who, of course, he'll be wrestling on Raw this Monday night. Jay then ascends to the top rope. He missed the splash on Fatu. Fatu followed that up with a pop-up Samoan drop, only for a near fall. Solo Sikoa tagged in, and Jay super kicks him. He spears Fatu. Fatu, though, wasn't the legal man. And Jay is sitting on top of him. He's hooking the leg. He's trying for the pin. Referee is trying to say no, no, no. He's not legal. Here comes Solo Sikoa into the ring, and he hits the Samoan spike to Jay Uso, and he pins Jay Uso. So the show ends then with a rundown of all the matches coming up on Netflix this Monday night. And the Bloodline standing tall in the middle of the ring. How many times have you heard me say that at the end of one of these shows? I said it at the top. I think maybe I'm just starting to get Bloodline fatigue at this point. This didn't do much for me. It wasn't a bad match, but this just was very flat to me. And the crowd was surprisingly quiet during parts of the match where you would have expected them to be a little more up. Because they were certainly up when Tiffany came out to cash in her money in the bank. And then it felt like everything after that, except Jay's entrance, I guess, was just like, eh. You know, it's just kind of there. If you factor in the entrances for this and the match itself, they gave 25 minutes to this. Start to finish. Solo Sikoa, though, he gets the win for the Bloodline. They wanted to make him look strong heading into Tribal Combat. I also think it makes it just a little less likely that he's going to walk out with that win on Monday night. I know it's a huge match on Monday, and I know why. With all the star power of the Usos and Sammy, and of course it's the Bloodline, so you want to close the show with it. Yeah, I get that. But the women's match and the cash-in should have closed the show. Because the women's match was quality shit. Again, they have had a couple of really good matches together, those two. Tonight was no different. That plus the cash-in would have been a fine way to go off the air tonight. So if I had the power to format this in a certain way, I would have flipped it. And I would have closed the show with that. That would have been much better. But again, they're promoting this big Tribal Combat match for Monday night. And they wanted that final parting shot to be Solo Sikoa standing tall with his finger in the air, dominant and victorious, going into Tribal Combat. On the whole, I thought it was a good show. If they would have, ended it differently. Think about this. If they would have ended that women's segment differently, let's say Tiffany whacks Naomi in the head with the briefcase and she doesn't hit Nia with it. That's just how it ends. I feel like a lot of people would have a very different opinion of this show tonight. We'll check the poll here in a second. I imagine it's going to be a high score, but I feel like a lot of people would vote differently and have a very different opinion of tonight's show had that cash-in situation gone differently. Either she didn't cash in at the end of all that and was just back with Nia, or she cashed in and lost. People would have a very different opinion of tonight's show. 3 hours of this every week, it's going to take some getting used to. I know we had it with Raw. Now we have it with SmackDown. Theoretically, it'll give more people an opportunity to get on the show every week. Good for them. It's going to take some getting used to, because it's going to be hit or miss. It really is. It's going to be hit or miss. The cash-in stuff is really what sold this show tonight. You take that cash-in stuff out, my opinion of the show is very different. But the Netflix era begins on Monday. That, too, will be at least 3 hours. We've basically got a PLE on Monday. I mean, you've got Tribal Combat, you've got Rhea Ripley challenging Liv Morgan, which, by the way, we had one women's championship change tonight. We're probably getting another one on Monday. So we have those two matches. We have Seth Rollins and CM Punk, which is the real main event of that show. John Cena will be back on that show. The Rock will likely be on the show. There may even be some other surprises. You know, who knows? We'll see. Drew McIntyre and Jey Uso are wrestling on that show. They're saving the finals of the Intercontinental title tournament for the women for the following Monday. And I said this on Monday, and I think there was a report today that basically backed up exactly what I said in my Raw review, which is it was probably going to take place on Monday, but as stacked as that card is, they don't want it to get lost in the noise. If they do Lyra Valkyria against Dakota Kai on that show, it's just, I mean, look at what it's surrounded by. All these other big matches, nobody's going to care as much as they would if you do it on a different show where it can get more attention put on it. So it makes sense to hold off until the 13th and do the match then. That's what they're doing. But Monday's going to be a big night, and it's going to be a big review here on the channel. So I expect you to be here with me. What did you think of the first SmackDown of 2025? 87.5% thumbs up, 12.5% thumbs down. And a lot of that, I guarantee you, has to do with Tiffany Stratton successfully cashing in her money in the bank. I think that score would be very different. I'm not saying it would be 40%, but I think it would be very different were it not for that cash. A lot of people very happy see the title on Tiffany Stratton. Some people very happy to see the title off Nia Jax. I have to give Nia Jax her flowers, though. And I think I have. This run has been far superior to her previous run in the company. And she's actually had a bunch of really good matches this year. They're not all good. But the match she had with Rhea Ripley at Elimination Chamber, I remember that being a good match. She opened the year with a win over Becky Lynch on Raw. That was a good match. A couple of really good matches with Naomi. And I think there have been a couple of others on TV that stand out. I can't remember exactly who it was against. So her run that she ended up having, you know, she won Queen of the Ring and then she won the championship. And she just, you know, wrapped up the best year of her career. So you got to give her credit where credit is due. I don't see how anybody can objectively look at the run that this woman had and the matches that she was having for the most part. I mean, War Games was a very different story. In that women's War Games match, she looked fucking terrible. But by and large, I mean, she had a really good year. And I think people need to acknowledge that. Let's take a look at your super chats. What did you think of the final SmackDown here? Let us find out. Thank you, guys. For all the love this week. Going back to New Year's Eve, man, we had a hell of a stream on Tuesday night. And we had the Dynamite stream on Wednesday. And we got SmackDown tonight. Love to see it. Let's go back to the first one that came in earlier tonight. And it came in from WWE Wrestling and Gaming, who wanted to know my thoughts on the John Cena U.S. Open Challenge from many years ago. I thought it was great. Some of the people that he worked with, I know Cesaro was one of them, but some of the people he worked with and the matches he had, I thought were a great spotlight for some of those people. And it was unique to have a star of his caliber in the company at that time defending what was a mid-card title consistently on television every single week. You know, in an age where we've had people like Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns with the top title who were basically absentee champions, and they're, you know, during their runs were rarely ever around and wrestling on TV. Brock never wrestled on TV. Looking back on it, it was nice to have, you know, someone that high up on the food chain, that active and having, you know, kick-ass matches with people he ordinarily wouldn't be working with. So it gets a thumbs up from me. David, absolutely. That New Year's Eve stream was certainly a way to start a brand new year. Honey Deep Fried Chicken says, "Hey, Solomonster, I want to say Happy New Year to you. I've been so busy lately." Happy New Year to you as well. I hope it's off to a good start. Holiday 197, "Hey Solo, what are your thoughts on WrestleMania being a multi-promotion event with the biggest matches from AEW, Impact, and New Japan featured. It would make WrestleMania feel more special as a grand showcase. Absolutely not. First of all, obviously that will never, ever happen. Okay, not in a million years will that ever happen. That's number one. Number two, that's not what WrestleMania is for. WrestleMania is not about featuring people from other promotions. That's what Forbidden Door is. That's what, it's a separate standalone event. WrestleMania is the culmination of the year for WWE. Not for AEW and not for Impact and not for New Japan. New Japan has the Tokyo Dome and AEW has their shows and WWE has theirs. And that would make absolutely no sense. If you're a WWE fan, why the hell would you want to see that at WrestleMania? That could be one thing to have like a special attraction match. If there was a reason to do like one match, but holiday, that's not what WrestleMania is for. If that was ever going to happen, and it won't, but if it was ever going to happen, it would be a separate standalone event. Honey Deep Fried Chicken says, starting off 2025 with wrestling conspiracy theories, Drew McIntyre is secretly doing the dirty work for the final boss. Interesting. I've seen this theory floated by a few people that Drew McIntyre is going to... Now, Drew McIntyre getting involved in tribal combat would not surprise me because we know Roman Reigns is on his hit list. But that he would take the Ulafala or steal the Ulafala and give it to The Rock. Or on The Rock's behalf, perhaps, we find out that McIntyre gets involved and does something in the match. I don't see it. I think it would be cool. And it would be a great spot for McIntyre to be in, to involve him in something like that involving The Rock and Roman. I don't see it, though. I don't see it, but, you know, then again, he hates Roman so much. I can't rule it out completely. You know, if The Rock comes back and The Rock has a bone to pick with Roman Reigns, and Drew really wants to get back at Roman, I can't say that it's impossible for me to conceive of some sort of understanding or alliance between Rock and McIntyre. I just don't think that's the way it's going to play out, though. Real CS. With Raw leaving USA for the second time, why did the then WWF leave the first time in 2000? As I recall, I think they just got a better deal. I don't remember all the specifics offhand, but I think it was just a better deal that they got. Because they were still very much, I don't want to say at the very peak, but they were kind of still at the peak of their popularity, and the ratings were very, very strong. So it wasn't a case where USA wanted to lose them. They just got a better deal. Holiday says, thoughts on a Drew McIntyre versus LA Knight feud if Drew goes to SmackDown? I think that could work. Absolutely. Again, if Drew were to go to SmackDown, he'd have a bunch of new people to work with. So I'm all for it. And same for LA Knight. You know, he could use some new people to work with too. Nate, it's Tiffy time. Congrats. I'm happy I popped for her. I bet her and Ludwig are going to have some amazing Tiffy time tonight. The growth since NXT. And then it looks like... cut off there. I don't know what you were trying to say, but... Yes, Ludwig Kaiser, I'm sure, will be congratulating Tiffany Stratton in his own special way. As long as they keep the belt out of it. Like, we've had that issue before. We don't need the belt to be a part of any of this. All right, let's keep the belt out, shall we? Jerome Eugenio, it's about time Tiffany cashed in. Now we will see if she can survive Charlotte's cash in. Well, that is the question. That is the question. Can she survive Tiffany's cash in? Or Charlotte's cash in? I'm not so sure of. A MGM Ballin renewing his channel membership. Remember when you said you couldn't think of another heel turned by a heel besides Dom and Rhea? I thought of one. MJF on Cody in 2019. Happy 6 months. Yeah, thank you for 6 months, brother. I appreciate that. Happy New Year. You know, I know MJF was a heel that year. Well, you know what, though? I guess it's tough, though, because they didn't have weekly TV until October. But yeah, I guess MJF was a heel who happened to be friends with one of the top babyfaces. So yeah. Yeah, I think that would qualify. That guy Yeager. Love the Sound Off theme song. Well, you can give a hat tip to the Yatagarasu, man. He wanted to contribute in some way, and there it is. You heard it at the beginning of the stream tonight. I don't know how often I'll use it. It's not like the new permanent theme or anything like that, but it'll definitely be part of the rotation for sure. We've got Chris Ludek coming in with the 12. For Monday with Paul Heyman on the line. With Paul Heyman on the line. Paul Heyman on a poll coming up on Monday night. Sounds like one of our Be the Booker stipulations. Does this mean that Punk helps Roman win and they start transitioning to their program for WrestleMania? Also, does Rock appear on Monday? Also, this show dragged. Well, that's 3 hours for you. Get used to it. Yes, I think Rock appears on Monday. And do I think that he interferes in Tribal Combat? No. Hey, NWO Matt, thank you for the $25 Brie mode. It's Tiffy time. Best cash in a long time. What would you say was the best cash in prior? Not of all time, but like of the recent Money in the Bank cash ins that we've had in the last few years prior to tonight. What would you say was the best one? Chime in the chat and let me know what you think. Let's see how many of you vote for Liv Morgan cashing in on Ronda Rousey. Unhinged main event Frau. Oh, Fro. See, okay. So he literally put it in the chat and I still said it wrong. Unhinged main event Fro. Did Drew set Cody up? Yes. Yes. In the opening segment. Jeremy Rose. Logan is perfect for Cena to get off the... I don't know what that says. I believe Logan Paul is a fine opponent for Cena to get back to his winning ways. Logan Paul would not be an appropriate final WrestleMania adversary for John Cena. But at a Royal Rumble, at an Elimination Chamber, I think that would be a fine match. Hoofman Entertainment, over, under, Punk goes to the Rumble in 2026. That's why I brought it up earlier. I can't imagine him, unless he's hurt, I can't imagine him not being at the Rumble. So I'm going to say he's going to be there. You know, whether it's Saudi or not, I think if he's healthy, Punk will be there. One of the biggest shows of the year. He's got to be there. Jeremy Rose, the women... Well, I mean, I guess he doesn't have to, but he should be. The Women's Royal Rumble in 2026 is going to be a hoot. Well, they'll have to get... special attire made for the Rumble. Tiffany Stratton is not going to be able to wear what she was wearing tonight. How she doesn't choke, I'll never know. But at least, you know, look, if she ever falls off of a boat, if her and Ludwig are going boating and she falls overboard, at least we know she'll float. Starboy Bebop with a $4.99. In that WWE Vault video, the 123 kid sounded like he says, kind of like that YouTube video. It's as if he is from the future. Yes, yeah, so earlier today, there was a very cool 13, 14-minute video up on the WWE Vault channel. of behind the scenes, never before seen, never before released footage from a shoot that they did at Titan Tower in 1995. They shot an intro for Monday Night Raw on the roof of Titan Tower. They set a ring up there, a little crowd. They had a helicopter flying overhead with a spotlight. And they had all the top stars were there for the shoot. Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Diesel, Undertaker, Razor Ramon, Triple H. It's funny seeing Goldust there because he had just joined the company. I don't even know if he had debuted on TV yet. And he was there as well. Dean Douglas and Mr. Fuji and Yokozuna. I think Owen Hart was there, but they didn't. If he was, they didn't show him in the video. They probably kept him out on purpose. Fatu was there, not Jacob. So it's just the camera following them around. Like, imagine all of the footage like this they have in the vault that we don't even know about. And they just put it out there, and it was so cool. And there's a point in the video where they're interviewing the 1-2-3 kid. And Waltman is, I forgot what the context of the quote was, but he mentioned a U2 video. Something was like a U2 video, but the way he said it, it sounded like YouTube. And I'm like, this is 1995, okay? YouTube wasn't even a thing until, God, was it 2005? I think is when YouTube first, went live. Right? Because Twitter started in 2007 or 2008. I think YouTube was 2005. I'm pretty sure. So people, all of a sudden now, people think Waltman is from the future. But it's a really cool video. You definitely go check it out. I live for that shit. Like, that's the kind of shit that I want to see on that channel. They started putting up stuff like the Festival of Friendship with Jericho and Kevin Owens from 2017. I'm like, yeah, that's cool and all, but like, it's too recent. Like, give me rare classic shit, like behind-the-scenes stuff that I've never seen before. Like, I would love for them to start putting up old episodes of their Bite This internet show. Like, stuff like that. But that channel is great. We have our good friend Aldis Dick and Balls is with us tonight. With a $5 super chat. Nick Aldis and Balls Mahoney should be the next tag team champions. Balls Mahoney isn't even alive anymore, is he? Balls is gone. It's going to be awfully hard. Shawn Daniels. With Tiffany's cash in, that means Charlotte wins at Royal Rumble for a battle at WrestleMania, and Nia is headed to Raw because don't her and Charlotte still got heat. Oh, I don't know. I don't think that's going to be an issue. Nia should probably go to Raw just because she's another one, like Drew, who could probably use some new opponents. If there is any sort of issue with her and Charlotte, either it's overblown or they're not going to... It's not so bad that I think they would need to be separated. But clearly, she's not going to be in the world title picture anymore on SmackDown. So for that reason alone, it might make sense to move her. But I kind of like Candice LeRae being with her, and I don't think Candice is going anywhere as long as Johnny Gargano is on SmackDown. So, for her sake, she should probably hope that Nia stays on SmackDown. David Thiering. What's going on, David? Thank you for the $5. Think you've got a great thing going with that new intro song. Just curious, will you be using that on YouTube only or on the sound off as well? When I use it, it'll be on YouTube. Yeah, I mean, it's too long to use as an intro for the main show. So, when you hear it, it'll be on the channel. Jeremy Rose, if WWE removes the shackles, Cody and KO could have one of the greatest ladder matches of all time. Well, Cody has been a part of at least one very memorable ladder match, his very last match in AEW. And Kevin Owens has had some brutal ladder matches himself. Two of them that I could think of with Sami Zayn. Or I should say El Generico. Whatever happened to him. People think about the ladder war with them from Ring of Honor, but they had a brutal one in PWG as well. Prince Vegeta 95, patiently waiting for the end of this solo Sokoa mega push. He should not be main eventing over a big cash-in. I agree. I would have ended with the cash-in tonight for sure. Joseph Brooks, buy, rent, sell. On which company use rival company? Oh, which company use rival company talents best? WWE, Flair, Y2J, Guerrero, Benoit, Booker T, and Ray. TNA, Angle, Jeff Hardy, Dudley's, Christian. AEW, Moxley, Cody, Punk, and Danielson. WWE. Yeah, you mentioned Jericho and Benoit and Guerrero. I mean, the reason those guys left WCW in the first place is because there was a ceiling and they knew they weren't going to be able to break through. None of those guys would have been world champion. Benoit did, but that was out of desperation to try to keep him. But like the other guys, you think Eddie Guerrero would have become a world champion in WCW? You say Flair. I mean, I'm assuming you're referring to Flair when he came in 91. I mean, Flair was, he was never as big in WWE, like the man, truly the man, in the way that he was in the NWA. But Vince treated him a lot better than he treated a lot of other people, even Dusty. Put Dusty in fucking polka dots. He pretty much let Flair be Flair, you know, in WWE. So he treated him well. Yeah, I mean, of these examples that you give, I gotta go WWE. Arcade the Hedgehog. Hey, Solo. You don't look like a monster. How come? Well, because I don't want to scare people too much. So this is a facade. This is my nice guy facade. And when the camera goes off, that's a different story. Jeremy Rose, how do you do Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in Elimination Chamber so soon with Orton's feud seemingly next? Orton stays out that much longer? Did WWE ever consider bringing in Muda back in his heyday? Muda against Bret would have been awesome. Probably, but I don't know. I mean, Bret had a match with Tiger Mask in 1990 that was pretty shit, so... It depends. I mean, if you would have brought Muda in like 92, 93, yes. Like, Bret and Hakushi, man, they had some great matches in 95. So it depends which year. Because Muda had that run in WCW in 89. Muda in 89 against Bret, you would think, like, on paper, man, what a great match that would be, but not necessarily. And yeah, I mean, KO and Sammy at the Chamber, it probably would be a little too soon. Because Orton's not even back yet. But, you know, KO and Sammy, that could be the WrestleMania match. But then what do you do with Orton? Do they want to do Orton and Owens at WrestleMania? Do they hold Orton out until the Rumble? Maybe bring him back in the Rumble. Does he get involved in the ladder match in some way? I don't know. I didn't expect him to be out this long. DEH Sires, the new mat for Raw is black with six sponsors. Probably a giant Prime logo in the middle of the ring. Now that Logan Paul is on Raw, we'll probably get a fucking Prime. Right now, the Prime logo is only on PLEs. Watch, now with Logan on Raw, we'll get them in the middle of the ring on Raw. Joseph Stewart, if Stone Cold never had his neck surgery, do you think he would have become a big movie star like Rock did? No. Not like Rock. I mean, he might have landed a few roles, but I don't think it would have been much different than it was. He was in a bunch of movies, but they were all B movies. I enjoyed some of them for what they were, but they weren't great. He doesn't have the acting chops that The Rock has. Tonga Loa Superfan, be honest, your jaw would drop if Tonga Loa was the big surprise interruption of the Roman Solo match on Netflix. You're right. My jaw would drop. My jaw would drop at how fucking terrible that would be. You're not wrong. Kelly Reynolds. Would you ever consider doing retro pay-per-view reviews? Something like OSW, Deadlock, Wrestling's Real, etc. You and JD would kill it. I mean, I've done like watch-alongs before for old matches. It's just a time issue. There's just so much current content and streaming almost every night at this point where it's just tough to fit anything like that in other than a special stream every now and again. So, I wouldn't rule out something special here and there, but something consistent, you know, like an OSW, I mean, they do great stuff. And I love the retro stuff. It's just, it's more of a time issue than anything else. The Juliet says PWI is reporting the 2026 Rumble for Saudi Arabia. We already talked about that. Super Pony, is it just me or is it insane that KO and AJ had no chemistry in 2017? Is there another example of two great wrestlers that had no chemistry? Yeah, Bret Hart and Tiger Mask. Funny enough, that's a great example. Powerful one. I was in attendance tonight. The cash-in got the biggest reaction of the night. Awesome show tonight. It is tippy time. Yes, it sounded like everybody in the building very much enjoyed that. We've got Schematics. Schematics. I didn't forget about you. If I got the pen, I'm booking Sammy against KO, McIntyre against Cena, Rhodes against The Rock, Jacob against Roman, Punk against Rollins, Rhea against Io, Tiffany against Jordan Grace. There's no Charlotte on here and no Becky on here. So that right there is unrealistic, because if they're coming back, then they're going to be in prime spots on that show. So that's number one. Rhea versus Io, I'm with you on that. I'm all in on that. Tiffany against Jordan Grace is not going to happen at WrestleMania. Punk against Rollins, probably not happening at WrestleMania. If they're not going to do Roman and Rock, Roman and Punk would be the biggest match they could do. Third option would be Roman and Jacob. I'd love to see that match. But if there's a bigger match to be done with Roman, then you do the bigger match. Because at WrestleMania, that's what you try to shoot for. Rhodes and The Rock. I mean, look, they already set it up last year. So if they can do it, definitely, I think it should happen. McIntyre and Cena would be a great spot for McIntyre. Sammy and KO makes sense. So most of what you have here makes sense. You know, you hear these rumors, Roman versus Punk and Cody against Cena look to be the matches right now. Those are two big matches that you headline each night with, you know. I'm not saying Cody and Cena is the match that I would do. It wouldn't be my first choice, but you can't say it's not a big match. And that doesn't even account for the World Heavyweight Championship. But Gunther would not be in either of the main events unless he's in there with John Cena. If Punk is wrestling Roman and Cena is challenging for a title, Gunther is not getting top billing on either night. And I'm not even sure who he ends up facing in that situation. The Irate Observer came in earlier with the $50 bomb. Based on what we saw tonight, how are we feeling about Motor City Machine Guns and DIY 2 out of 3 falls in Toronto? We'll likely be on SmackDown, but I'll take what I can get. Also, mind-blowing that the Rumble will be an hour flight from Kuwait next year. That is pretty crazy. It's the first time they are ever taking one of their big annual shows and going international like that in a place that just has never had a major show like that before. As far as 2 out of 3 falls, sign me up. I think that would be great. You do it on SmackDown, you're just going to have to put up with a bunch of commercials. I'd be all for that, though. And in Toronto. I mean, DIY. What was it? DIY and the Revival? Was that the match in Toronto at TakeOver? That Toronto crowd would go nuts for it. Arabian Night with Raw and SmackDown now 3 hours. Hope we get longer matches instead of the standard 7 to 9 minute ones. Well, you're going to get longer matches. I mean, we had longer matches when Raw was 3 hours. Tonight, we had 2 20-minute matches tonight. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but the shows drag when they're 3 hours. You know, you always get to a point in the show where they just start to drag. Some weeks are going to be better than others. You know, we had a lot of really good 3 hour Raws last year, but I still wish it was the 2 hour format. Obviously they're getting paid a lot of money to go 3 hours. So I get it. The shows are what the shows are. There's nothing we can do about it. You know, you just hope that consistently they could put together shows that are able to keep your interest over the course of those 3 hours. But there are going to be plenty of weeks where the shows are going to drag. And you got two of them now. How long before NXT goes 3 hours? But he says, if AEW can have 4 to 5 matches that are 15 minutes plus, then there is no excuse for WWE. Well, I mean, AEW doesn't typically have 5 matches every Wednesday that go 15 minutes plus. Continental Classic is the exception because it's just wrestling, pretty much. They're just spitting wrestling matches out there. They had like 5 of them at the Hammerstein show last week. But that's not typical, that you get 4 or 5 15-minute plus matches on TV every week. And it's not even that I necessarily want that. I don't want every match on the show to be 15 minutes. Believe me, there are some matches that they do that are better off not being 15 minutes. But it's a matter of coming up with segments that are entertaining and content that is engaging. It doesn't have to be matches. It could be backstage segments. It could be some kind of a skit. God knows we've had terrible fucking comedy on this show going back many years. But sometimes they'll put together a segment that's genuinely funny. I don't care what type of segment it is. Just keep me entertained. Don't make me sit here when the show is over and go, man, I really wish I didn't watch. I really wish I could hit the rewind button and go back and not watch that show. I've sat through plenty of shows like that. That's the worst. That's the worst feeling. Andrew Lima, according to Spotify, I've listened to your buttery tones for over 300 hours. I love you, Solo. Buttery tones. You know, too much butter is not good for you. It's not healthy. Clogs your arteries. Thank you, Andrew. Nick Grosso, what's with the confusion about the Liv Rhea match? People thought it was going to be a last woman standing match, but now it's back to being promoted as a singles match again. What happened there? I didn't even notice that. Are they no longer promoting it as Last Woman Standing? Because they definitely announced it as Last Woman Standing. Yeah, I don't know. That's weird. If that's the case. Unless there was a creative change with what they have planned and they said, okay, we no longer want to do this stipulation because the finish of the match changed. Apparently, there was a lot of confusion and back and forth about the opening segment tonight because originally they were going to have Kevin Owens come out and cut a promo. And then there was talk that maybe Jey Uso would be involved in the segment, and then they finally settled on Cody coming out to do the promo and then McIntyre interrupting him. So even tonight, they were going back and forth on what they wanted to do. Do I think the WWE would do a Hammerstein show? I think they would. I think NXT would do a Hammerstein show. You're not going to get a main roster show there. But I think that NXT would do it. But the fact that AEW just did, they're not going to want to run Hammerstein for a while because it'll look like they're just following their lead. I think eventually we'll get an NXT show at the Hammerstein Ballroom, though, for sure. Schematics says, Jacob needs to be Contra Fatu. Those boots are killing me. Barefoot Jacob looks like an elite madman. Here he looks neutered. No, I mean, I think Jacob is doing fine. I just want to see him break away from Solo and start cutting real promos instead of just going, I love you, Solo, all the time. He's become a meme. And it's entertaining, but he's better than that. And at some point, we'll get to see the real Jacob Fatu. Contra unit Jacob Fatu from MLW. You know, that was proof that he can be a leader on his own. He doesn't have to be a follower. He can be a leader. Hopefully, he'll get that chance at some point. I would say if he feels neutered, it's just because of the spot that he's in. That's why it feels that way. He's not coming out and he's not able to be himself because right now he's subservient to somebody else. When that ends, we'll get to see the real Jacob Fatu come out. The number one Homo sapien, George, is with us. How long before Cody's forced to bring in the greatest bodyguard ever, the all-powerful Omos? Why would it be Cody? Wouldn't it be KO? Base Beerus says, it's tippy time. Thank you, Base Beerus. Boots with the 10 bucks. Happy New Year to Boots. Boy, he got us started off in a big way on Tuesday night. It may be the Steve Weiser's talking, but when Jacob turns on Solo, will he say, I'm sorry, I love you, Solo? Followed by a super kick. Also, are we staying up to do a Wrestle Kingdom watch along? You can stay up and do whatever you want. I'm already going on 4 hours sleep. I couldn't sleep last night. So I'm already running on fumes as it is. My plan is at some point tomorrow after I wake up, I will go back and watch Wrestle Kingdom. Hopefully I'll be able to get through the entire show and I'll be able to do basically a review and talk about it on the podcast on Sunday. I hope I can also talk about Wrestle Dynasty, but that's going to depend on when I'm able to finish the show. So it may be a late sound off on Sunday so I can watch that first. For those who don't know, Wrestle Kingdom starts. It is 1:30 in the morning right now, Eastern Time. Wrestle Kingdom is kicking off in about half an hour. The pre-show is at 2 a.m. Eastern, and the main card starts at 3. I'll be up, but I'm not staying up to watch the show tonight. Wrestle Dynasty starts at 10 p.m. Eastern tomorrow night. That's the pre-show. The main card starts at 11. So I might be able to watch part of the show, go to sleep, wake up, watch the rest. I haven't figured out what I'm doing yet. I'm still trying to put stuff together for Sunday, so I'll be working all day, but yeah, there's going to be a lot of Tokyo Dome action. Prince Vegeta, can Bianca KOD Ginny Sack? Not with that 90-pound mole on her ass, she can't. Tonga Loa Superfan, which option do you prefer more? Tonga Loa being the big surprise interruption of Solo and Roman at Netflix, or Tonga Loa being number 30 in the Royal Rumble? I prefer the option where Tonga Loa stays home and watches the Royal Rumble from the comfort of his own home. Does Wrestle Kingdom cost money? So here's the deal. Triller TV is offering a bundle where you can pay, I think it's $47, and you get both shows. It's like getting two pay-per-views. I think the smart thing to do if you're interested in watching the shows is just subscribe to New Japan World. I think New Japan World is like 10 bucks, if that, maybe a little less for the month. And that way you would get access to Wrestle Kingdom, Wrestle Dynasty. And if you're subscribed for the month, they always have their New Year Dash show on Monday. You can watch New Year Dash. And it won't cost you $47. That's what I would do. Go to njpwworld.com and look it up and see if it makes sense for you. Base Beer is the god of seduction. Ginny Sack, her blood type. One of my favorite jokes. I think the first time I heard that joke, it was Jerry Lawler on one of the shows. He was talking about Paul Bear, I think. He's like, he's so fat, his blood type is Ragu. I was like, that's a good one. That one always stuck with me. His blood type is Ragu. OM2 Cool black ring mat with logos, presumably for Raw on Netflix, has been posted by WrestleOps. Is that legit? Well, we'll see how obnoxious the logos are, I guess. But black mat is fine. A red mat would not work. A red mat every week for the match is just... That's just a non-start. NWO Matt says, it's Tiffy time. Best cash-in in a long time. Absolutely. NWO Matt says, this super chat is for Nia Jax. That is the off is the direction you can fuck super chat. Yeah, I believe on New Japan World, you have the option for either English commentary with Walker Stewart. I think usually it's Walker Stewart, who's really good, by the way. Very young, but surprisingly good, I think, for as young as he is. Walker Stewart and Chris Charlton. I don't know if they'll have a third person with them, but they probably are doing the English commentary. Or you can listen in Japanese. It's funny, you know, when I used to watch all the Wrestle Kingdoms, and they were really at their peak, and they had those great matches with Okada and Naito and like the key core guys, Tanahashi. I would watch the main events in Japanese, and I couldn't understand what the announcers were saying, but their enthusiasm is just infectious. And when you get to the latter stages of the match, where the crowd's getting up and the announcers are getting excited and they're going back and forth, you know the finish is coming, like, the Japanese commentary was always far more preferable than the English commentary. They're just so enthusiastic. I hope the crowd is enthusiastic. You know, New Japan has not recovered from COVID, business-wise. They're doing better than they were before. And they're trying to create some new stars now. But like in the past, they would have 30, 40,000 people in the Tokyo Dome. From what I saw, I think they're going to have maybe 20,000 each night in the Tokyo Dome. It's 20,000 people, but you know, the Tokyo Dome can fit 60. So not exactly going to be a packed house. Hopefully they'll have a good crowd, though. LaShawn says, do you think Mina is All Elite by 2026? I wonder. I don't know what her contract status is, but I would say there's a pretty good chance of it, yeah. Nick Grosso, with this apparent McIntyre-Owens alliance, I think we get a Cody and Orton versus Owens and McIntyre tag feud for a little while. I could see that. I mean, if Orton were to come back in the next couple of weeks, that could even be a main event for Saturday night's main event. Might be too soon, because again, Orton's not even back yet, but I could see that being a Saturday night's main event match. OM2 Cool. The sad part about the cash-in, though, is that we won't get to see Tiffany run down the ramp anymore. Can someone do a Baywatch slow-mo edit of that? Easy there, big fella. Take a cold shower. Demetrius Hodge, do you think AJ Styles will be in the Rumble? I hope so. I haven't seen any updates on his foot injury. It's going to completely depend on when he gets cleared. He's got a month. So I would say yes. But I'm just going by gut instinct here. I've seen no updates on his foot injury. Huffman Entertainment. Look at this guy. Channel member for 45 months. Also, shout out to me and my wife, Jenny. We are celebrating 6 years of marriage tomorrow. Tomorrow being Sunday. Yes, she is a sound-off girl. Those are the best girls. The sound-off girls are the best. Congrats to both of you on the anniversary. That's very cool. You better do something special. Listen to the sound-off. There you go. Funky Weapon. Not personally excited for Roman versus Solo. Well, neither am I. I'm far more excited for Punk and Rollins than I am Roman and Solo. Powerful One says, if Cody and KO can even come close to Jericho Benoit in 01, we are in for an awesome ladder match. I still remember the Walls of Jericho in the ladder. Or what was it? It was, yeah, basically that's what it was. That's a great spot. It's a great ladder match, and one of the best ladder matches in WWE history. There he is, the Yatagarasu. $10 super chat. I am honored to be able to contribute something that you and the Sound Off family enjoyed. I wrote as best as I could based on your favorite genre, style, and energy. We love you, Solo. You did good, my friend. Thank you. I appreciate it. Super Pony, will we ever get that KO Fatu match? Yes, I think we will. Don't ask me when, though. I don't know when. Especially now that they're both heels. DEH Sires, let's do Roxanne against Jordan for the U.S. title at WrestleMania. So you're booking a U.S. title match with two people who aren't even on the main roster. I don't think that's going to happen. Eminem, it's about damn time that Tiffany cashed in that briefcase. I couldn't do it anymore. By the way, I saw BTS. I thought that said, by the way. The backstage of Raw 95 intro was cool. By any chance, did we get a tease of Aldis thinking about wrestling again? Oh, and that segment with Cody in the back? I didn't read it that way. I guess you could look at it that way, where he said, if you don't, you know, I don't have the exact verbiage from the promo. Let me go back. What did he say exactly? What did he say exactly? Let's replay it, shall we? Let's see what Nick Aldis said to Cody Rhodes. Here we go. Pleaded with Cody to think about his future. He said, if Cody won't do that, Aldis will do that for him. Yeah, I didn't read that as any kind of tease about him getting in the ring. It was just him being the GM. And sometimes I have to be a boss and I have to look out for the health and safety and well-being of my talent. I read that more as him maybe suspending Cody or sending him home to protect him than, hey, I'm going to get in the ring and kick your ass. So no, I didn't see that as a tease for that. Funky Weapon, any Cena dream matches that you want to see this year? I floated one in my predictions for 2025. I said you got two big names that are having their retirement year this year. John Cena is one. Hiroshi Tanahashi is the other. Cena against Tanahashi. And oh, Harold. So a car just blew up down the street from me. Well, that sucks. At least you weren't in it. Stay safe, my friend. That's very scary. And Tonga Loa Superfan. Where do you keep your Tonga Loa merch? I don't ever see it on your streams. I gave it to Goodwill. I feel like other people should be spreading the word of Tonga Loa. That was my contribution to that. I do applaud your dedication, though. You are certainly committed to the cause. All right, we're almost at 500 likes, so we certainly blew past that goal tonight. Thank you. Thank you very much. We got some good messages here, some good questions, some good predictions. I like it. But right now, you know what I would like even more? Is to be the booker. So let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
The only way you can end a week is with Be The Book. Super Pony says, Cena is so washed, it's not even funny. You know what I'm curious to see? Cena has cleared his schedule for this year. He's going to be in as full-time as he has been full-time in years. 30-something dates he's doing this year. I want to see, when he gets in the ring the first time and then again after that in a WrestleMania, I want to see if he works any differently than he did when he wrestled Austin Theory a couple of years ago. Because I do wonder, he isn't the same performer. He's older. He's not the same performer. But I do wonder if part of that was he just wanted to have the most basic match that he could, because he was in the middle of filming something, didn't want to get hurt, didn't want to overexert himself. And now that he's cleared his schedule and he's just going to be wrestling and not doing anything else, I wonder if we might see more out of him. I'm not saying he'll start doing Hurricane Ronas like he used to be doing, but how much of it is him being washed and how much of it was him holding back because he had other obligations that he no longer has this year? That's what I'm curious to find out. We begin here with The Bar. Sheamus and Cesaro. Oh, man, I forgot Cesaro had the mouthpiece. That's right. I forgot about that match where he got his teeth knocked out on the top of the ring post. God, that was brutal. Who were they wrestling in that match? Was it the Usos or the New Day? I mean, I don't remember even the move. If it was like he dove and the spot was that the person moved out of the way or he got slingshotted in, whatever it was. But like, he hit the very top of the ring post casing with his mouth and knocked his fucking teeth out. What a nightmare. All right, we got The Bar. Speaking of Austin Theory. Austin Theory and Grayson Waller. A-Town Down Under against Sheamus and Cesaro. I think that could be a good match, actually. I do. They're certainly not pushed at any high level, but I think that that could be a good match. Now, David says it was the Usos. I think it might have been the Usos. All right, women's Be the Booker. Speaking of not being pushed in any meaningful way, talk about a sad situation. We have Camille. And you'll notice in her hand is the NWA Women's Championship, which she had in her possession for over 700 days. But you would never know that based on the way she was used in AEW, where she was quickly neutered and killed off. But this is Camille back when she truly was a brick house. Remember her for her run there and not for her run in AEW. Camille is going to wrestle Willow Nightingale. Very rarely do I see a bad Willow Nightingale match. If Willow is on the card and she's got a match on the show, you can be pretty confident it's going to be a good match. All right, men's Be the Booker. Boy, all these people are talking about the raw ring mat for Netflix. I have not seen this photo yet. I'm going to have to check this out here in a minute. Let's pick a stipulation here first for our main event. Since we already are nearing 500 likes, which would be awesome if we could break that before we end here. We're at 497. Can we hit 500? It's an I quit match. So we are booking an I quit match in our main event. Oops. All right. Here we go. What a great shot that was on that Dynamite. What a great camera shot. Let's cut to Mike Tyson sitting at ringside yawning like he is bored out of his mind. This is a real photo here. Mike Tyson in an AEW shirt at Dynamite yawning. Yes, Nick Grasso, tired Mike Tyson. We go from Iron Mike Tyson to tired Mike Tyson. Probably watching a Chris Jericho match would be my guess. Mike Tyson is in our main event tonight. This is interesting. We have tired Mike Tyson taking on Johnny Gargano. So close, yet so far. See, that would be just an absolute mauling. This would be one of those like boxing main events on or like MMA fights that they really promote the shit out of, and you pay like $100 for it because they charge these ridiculous prices now. And the fight starts, and then 6 seconds later, it's over. And you're like, this is what I paid for? This would be awful. Terrible. Just dreadful. And Cameron Spencer says, Omos against Cross at WrestleMania. Bell or buzzer? Buzzer. That was an easy one. Hey, you want to know my thoughts? That's my thoughts. Now you got Logan Paul, who is trying to get a fight going with Mike Tyson. Trying to cash in. He's trying to fight Conor McGregor. He's trying to fight Mike Tyson. Now he's going to pick a fight with John Cena, probably. Possibly on Monday night. This guy is everywhere. You can't quit if you're unconscious. Well, you got me there. That's true. The Raw ring has a giant Fortnite. Hold on a second here. Let me see if I can find this photo that everybody is talking about here. I have not seen this yet, so let me see if I can find it. Raw ring mat. Let's see. Okay, so here is a... So there is a photo here. I mean, do we know... Oh, that is actually quite disgusting. This was from SmackDown, because you could see the SmackDown LED. I'm going to bring it up here so everybody can see it. Yeah, I'm not a fan of this, but the color is fine. I don't have an issue with the color of it. All right, here it is. This is the photo that is going around on social media that, not confirmed, but clearly this is from a WWE show, so I mean, it's a legitimate photo, but again, the black mat, I don't have an issue with the black ring mat, but what is with all these fucking logos? Like, I know they were going to be doing more advertising on the ring mats, but this is ridiculous. We have, what is that? American Lager, Cricket, we have Netflix, we have Snickers, we have Fortnite. This is terrible. This looks fucking awful. This is awful. You know what? The one thing I will say about Vince McMahon, they said it, I think it was Mark Shapiro. Vince always wanted a clean, like ring mat. He would not allow ads on the turnbuckles or on the ring mat. You know, the LED boards, that was fine. This is why. Like, WCW used to be sponsored by Snickers, like Halloween Havoc, and you'd have the Snickers logo on the mat, or you would have Slim Jim. But that was the sponsor. had one sponsor and you had their logo on the mat, right? Not a big deal. And they had the pay-per-view event logo right in the middle. This is ridiculous here. This is too much. Yes, I want a clean mat too. Vince was right. Only time you'll hear me say that. David Thiering, thank you for the $20. I just looked it up. Cesaro's teeth were knocked in from WWE No Mercy 2017 when the Bar faced Rollins and Ambrose in a tag team title match. The Usos stuck out to me because they did roast the Bar in a Raw promo about it. Okay, so it was Rollins and Ambrose. I have no memory of the match itself. But I definitely remember that injury, and it was just brutal. I mean, he needed all kinds of dental work. He had like a mouth guard in for a while. Oof. Yeah, no, I mean, look, if that's the mat they're going to use on Monday, it's not just going to be for the first show. That's going to be the mat. They're going to have their sponsors, and it's going to be that way every week. Am I going to watch Nosferatu? Nosferatu. No, I'm not. What was that movie? This annoyed the shit out of me the other night, almost as much as that other movie that they were promoting however long ago it was. Constant, not like last week, I think, on SmackDown, the constant ads for this fucking movie. What was that other movie that pissed me off? It had, oh God, what was it? Started with an R, but there was a movie. They were promoting it so hard. It was like every fucking commercial break was this stupid movie, and I vowed I would never watch this movie. And I forgot the name of it. No, I will not be watching Nosferatu. I got a bone to pick with Max. I was on Max just checking out, you know, what the layout and everything is for the AEW content, because now they added finally classic AEW content. And the Renfield. Yeah, that's the one. Fucking Renfield. Fuck Renfield. Never watched that movie, Renfield. But I was on Max exploring, and unbeknownst to me and completely unannounced, they took The West Wing off of Max. And I just so happened to be in the middle of watching the friggin' series for the last few months. Took it off, as of New Year's Day, gone. No warning, no like, hey, you got 30 days left. Like, nope, just gone. Like, you motherfuckers, so fuck Max, too, while we're at it. Fuck Renfield, fuck Nosferatu, and fuck Max. Joker 2, worst movie of 2024. You know, I stayed away from that movie because people told me how bad it was. Watch The Batman. I will. It's on my list. Madam Web. I think Madam Web is one of the worst reviewed movies of all time. Hey, Eminem. WrestleMania recently did a video of wrestlers that are considered banned from the WWE Hall of Fame. What are your thoughts on that? I don't know what wrestlers they named. If they're banned from the Hall of Fame, I'm sure there's a good reason for it. But I didn't see the list, so I can't comment on it. Joseph Mano, what's going on, Joseph? Have you had a chance to watch Homicide: Life on the Street yet? So I learned in August that they were adding Homicide: Life on the Street to, was it Hulu? Hulu or Max, whichever service it was. And I was like, okay, I'm going to start. Cause I didn't, the only thing I knew of it, Like, I knew who was on it. I knew Andre Brower was on it. I knew that's where the Munch character from Law & Order originated from Homicide. And I know they did some crossover episodes from Law & Order. I said, I probably would enjoy the series. I watched the first episode from the very first season, and I never went back to it. It didn't hold my interest. Now, it's just one episode. I probably should have kept going for a few. I might go back to it at some point, but after that first episode, I was like, you know what? I didn't like it as much as I thought I would. So I just never went back to it. That's when I started The West Wing, which I love. Until now, fuck Max. Peacock. Okay. It's on Peacock. There's so many different services now. My God, it's like Netflix and Peacock and Max, Hulu, Amazon. Roku. My God. If you're a sports fan, it's even worse. ESPN, and you've got all the RSNs now, and certain teams. You know, the Mets. You know, you have YouTube TV. I can't even watch Mets games anymore. Like, it's ridiculous. You want to watch the Knicks, you need Fubo. Who could keep track of all these different services? Other than Benoit, some of the names included China, Miss Elizabeth, Lex Luger, and Owen Hart. None of those people are banned from the Hall of Fame. Owen Hart, the only reason Owen Hart is not in the Hall of Fame is because his wife, his widow does not want him in there. That's the only reason he's not in. He's not banned. China is not banned from the Hall of Fame. Elizabeth will go in one day. Lex Luger will go in one day. Demolition will go in one day. They're not banned. There's a difference between not going in at the moment and being banned from the Hall of Fame. So many services, and they're all competing to see who has the worst business practices. Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, technically, China is technically already in as part of DX, but, you know, she should get a solo induction. Rick Martel is an interesting one. Rick Martel absolutely belongs in the Hall of Fame. My sense is he, at least in the past, just didn't necessarily have an interest in being a part of it. I don't know if that's the case now. I think he should absolutely be in there. Do I have a favorite NFL team? I don't have like a passionate fandom for any particular team, but I was more of a Jets fan than a Giants fan. You know, I think I've told the story when I used to go to college and I was off for the summer. The Jets used to practice at the school, you know, where I went to college. So when we would move out of our dorms, the Jets players were moving in. So there was one day I was moving out for the summer. I don't remember who it was. It was one of the Jets players. I think it was a running back. And he was coming in as I was going out. Like, we like bumped into each other, like, oh, I'm sorry. And I used to go watch them practice. So that was cool. Got a bunch of like autographs in an autograph book. I think this is when God, who was the head coach at the time? I think it might have been Tuna. But yeah, both football teams are such fucking garbage right now. Like, even if I was a diehard fan, I feel like I would have just given up. They're so terrible. They're both so terrible. It's just, it's embarrassing. Yep. Curtis Martin. Oh, Wayne Krabet. You know, he used to play for the Jets, and then he opened up a bar called Krabet's right across the street from the school. I mean, the school is right next to the Nassau Coliseum. So, I mean, Krabet's was right, literally right across the road it's like the Coliseum and then this main road. It's Hempstead Turnpike. And then he had a bar that was right there. I don't know what it is now. Yes, yes. Bill Parcells is who I was referring to. According to Bruce Pritchard, Rick Martel was offered the Hall of Fame a few times, but turned them down. Yeah, that's what I had heard. And I don't think it was necessarily anything against the Hall of Fame. I just think whatever was going on at the time, he just wasn't interested. I think he was just out of the business and doing other stuff, real estate or something, and he just, you know, was living his life. He seems to be a well-adjusted person who, you know, retired, got out of the business, and is living his life. Being a New York sports fan in general has been rough for a while now. Yeah. Well, it's all about to change this baseball season. You got to believe it's all about to change. I'm looking forward to it. At least the Knicks are doing great right now. Last time I saw, they were on a 9-game winning streak. Yeah. Yeah. The Knicks are doing pretty well. OM2 Cool. Speaking of Cope, that Rock Coach Copacabana segment. LMAO. Yes, Kratos, the Mets are not going to win because of one player. I didn't say they're going to win because of one player. I'm going to say that one player is going to lift them along with their other players. They've got other good players. They just need pitching. But they're going to do just fine. Do the Mets bring Pete Alonso back? I say yes. How are the Nets doing? Have no idea and don't really care. So the next time I'm live with you guys, it's going to be like a PLE. It's going to be a big stream on Monday night coming out of the Netflix debut. Of course, before then, we'll have episode 895 of the podcast going up later in the day, most likely, on Sunday as I try to get all of my Tokyo Dome watching in. I'm going to try. I make no promises. I think Wrestle Kingdom were good, but Wrestle Dynasty, we'll see if I can get it all in. Wrestle Dynasty really is the bigger of the two shows. I just dropped my pen. We've got Kenny Omega wrestling his first match in over a year. And a bunch of other AEW stars are going to be on that show as well. So I am looking forward to seeing how he looks after so much time off. Is Dan Severn in what? The Hall of Fame? Not the WWE Hall of Fame, he's not. I'm sure he's in the UFC Hall of Fame, though. I'd be shocked if he wasn't. Warhawk Rambo. I know sports frustration being a diehard Commanders fan. See, so you can relate. Shamrock, I think, is going to go in the next, I'm going to say, couple of years. You know, him having a Legends deal or some kind of merchandising contract, at least now, with WWE, like, the ice has been broken. Whatever the reason was for it before, at least now they're on better terms and they're working together in that way. I think that'll pave the way for a Hall of Fame induction in the next few years. You know, Shamrock was never a world champion there, but he had a pretty good run there, all things considered. You know, he worked with the top guys. He held the Intercontinental title, the tag team title. He was part of the corporation. He is the reason we have tap outs in wrestling. Tapping out in WWE didn't become a thing until 97 when Shamrock came in. So he was influential. And he also can claim to be part of one of the greatest matches in the history of the company. Because he was in the ring as the referee for Bret Hart and Steve Austin at WrestleMania 13. He was part of that match. Should The Rock induct him? Shamrock was put into the TNA Hall of Fame, and The Rock actually sent a video in for his induction. So, if The Rock was up for it, I don't see why he wouldn't be. Yeah, I don't know if WWE would want Rock to do it. Rock himself has to go in, by the way, at some point in the next few years. But yeah, Rock, I think inducted Shamrock or sent in a video for Shamrock for the TNA Hall of Fame. So I could see him doing something like that for him in WWE. Didn't people tap to the sharpshooter? Look, there may have been people who were banging on the mat in pain, but no, it was basically like verbal submissions before. There was no like, oh, he tapped out. No, that did not start until Shamrock joined the company. What's worse, Viking experience or Cope? Viking experience. Notice how multiple people who had heat with WWE have been acknowledged, contacted, or invited back to events under the Triple H regime. It's not surprising. I mean, Triple H is the one who Vince basically told him when he wanted to try to get Bruno Sammartino back into the fold. Like, yeah, good luck with that. You want to try, go ahead, but good luck with that. And he's the one that facilitated Bruno and Warrior coming back. You know, so the fact that he would be more open to, you know, having people back in the family, Jesse Ventura, you know, is another one who previously were on the outside for whatever reason. Doesn't surprise me because he had already demonstrated the ability to kind of be a bridge, you know, before in a way that Vince wasn't or just wasn't interested in trying to be. And I think that's great because life is too short and so many of these wrestlers aren't even around anymore. And I just think it's silly. So I would hope they can put aside petty shit like that to, you know, bring people back in and put them in the Hall of Fame or give them a cameo on TV or something, because these guys aren't going to be around forever. Owen Hart should be in the Hall of Fame under Triple H's era, in my opinion, if Martha wants it. She doesn't want it. That's why he's not in. I think it's safe to say that if Savage had lived, he would have been in a long time ago. I don't know about the Hall of Fame, but Savage had already, like, right before he passed away, he had done some stuff with the video game at the time. Like, he was already starting to do some stuff, but it wasn't, I don't think it was directly with WWE. I mean, that's how the Warrior thing happened, right? That was a video game thing. And then from there, it morphed into something more. Yeah, Savage would have been back eventually. I think fences would have been mended and he would have been back. It seemed like that was the direction they were already going in. Plus, I mean, there was just too much money to be made with the Macho Man being back in the WWE family and all the merch opportunities. Like, he would have been back. He would have been back. Will there ever be an AEW Hall of Fame? Yes. Yes. And I think Tony Khan will put Sting in as his first inductee. Well, actually, I stand correct. You know what? OM Too Cool, I think you might be right. He says Dave Meltzer will be the first inductee. I think you might be right. Who will induct him? Well, Tony might do it, right? Tony can do the induction, or the Bucks. Maybe the Young Bucks will induct him into the Hall of Fame. Or Will Ospreay. He can induct Meltzer in. Oh my God, what would that speech be like? Ugh. Can you imagine that acceptance speech? You know, like, so, like, just like 45 minutes of that. Oh, man. And I thought Mr. T's speech was painful to listen to. Dave ruined that by not having Tony as Booker of the Year. Oh, so okay. So I guess Meltzer would be banned from the AEW Hall of Fame. Alvarez will wheel him out after an hour of that. He'll walk out on stage like Kane did during... whose speech did he give? He gave the hook to somebody. Was it Backlund? I think it might have been Backlund. And Kane had to walk out on stage to like give him the hook, like, okay, you're done. That'll be Alvarez walking out on stage to give Meltzer the hook. Hey, Rock and Roll Express. Somebody mentioned them in the chat. Rock and Roll Express is going to be on Collision this weekend. So we had Cope in the main event on Wednesday. Jeff Jarrett going after the AEW World Championship. And we have the Rock and Roll Express back on TV this weekend, along with Elton John's song that they're going to be using. And, of course, who could forget the Pointer Sisters, now the official theme song for AEW Dynamite. I'm so excited. We really are going back in time with these shows, aren't we? We have to figure out what the theme song is going to be if AEW gets a third show, if they get their Shockwave show. What music should it have? What song will Tony pay for the rights for next? We should all try to figure out what that song is going to be. I'm going to say that in tribute to Sting, he'll go with The Sting. That'll be the theme song for Shockwave. Does Cena go in 2016? I think Cena could go in this year. I think Cena could be the headline inductee in the Hall of Fame this year. It could be part of his final year in wrestling. Highway to Hell. You know what? Highway to Hell would be a great choice. That would be a great choice, actually. I can get behind that. Backstreet Boys, I Want It That Way. A shot to everyone who complains about Tony Khan's booking. Why wouldn't Cena go in next year so that he can talk about his final match? Why does he have to talk about his final match? You realize that Cena has cleared his schedule this year. Okay? You don't know what his schedule is going to be like after that. So knowing in advance that he's available and you have him and you can build a Hall of Fame class around him, they tried to do that with Dave Bautista and then he got busy and he couldn't do it. So knowing that Cena is free, you take advantage of that. That's why you do it this year. Hey, Uffman, thank you. Tony Khan somehow buys the rights to the original SmackDown theme song. How does that go again? Kratos, it's fine. You're overreacting. We had Rey Mysterio go into the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago. He's still active. Sometimes people are still active after they go into the Hall of Fame. You can have a Hall of Fame career, even though you're still technically active, and you're still wrestling matches. I think it's fine. I'm expecting to see Cena buffed up and killing it. I want him to go back to the fade. But let's go back to the fade haircut he had in the early 2010s. Let's go back to that. I laid it all out in my predictions, by the way, for 2025. What I think the Hall of Fame class is going to be this year for the WWE Hall of Fame. So if you want to know what the full class I think is going to be, you can go back and listen to that. Thoughts on Ric Flair saying he has one more match left in him? Flair says that all the time. He doesn't have another match left in him. He almost fucking died in his last one. He'll go to his grave claiming that I could still have one more match. He's not having another match. Nobody will ever clear him to have another match. And there isn't anybody in this world with a fucking brain cell in their head who seriously would want to see this man back in the ring unless they want to see harm come to him. And even then, I still have no interest in seeing him back in the ring. Flair wants to die in the ring. Good. Let him buy a ring and put it in his garage and he can die in the ring. Ric Flair in a casket match. It may come to that. Sadly, it may come to that. Gary Silkin would probably want harm to come. Now, he doesn't want harm to come to Ric Flair because then he's not going to get paid. Flair owes him $40,000. He doesn't want him to die. He wants him to live so he can get his money. Boots, you know what? You may have a point there. Buried alive match? What's going on, Muhammad? It's good to hear from you. God, Ric Flair in a buried alive match. Bigger liar, Flair or Hogan? Hogan. All right, guys. Wrestle Kingdom is underway right now. The pre-show is underway. The main card starts very shortly. If you are watching it live, enjoy. I will try to catch up with it sometime in the morning. But it's going to be a very busy wrestling weekend. Heading into the biggest Raw of all time. Certainly the biggest, most heavily promoted Raw of all time. That's coming up on Monday night. I'm looking forward to it. It should be a good time. Be well. Stay safe. I can't believe it's almost 2:30. I got to get out of here. We're having too much fun hanging out here. I'll see you guys back here on Monday night. Hit that like button on your way out. It's the Netflix era. It begins. CM Punk and Seth Rollins. Is this CM Punk's first Raw match since the match with Billy Gunn in 2014? That was his last match on Raw, wasn't it? I think it was. From Billy Gunn to Seth Rollins. It's quite the upgrade. I'll see you guys on Monday night. Take care.